Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Lucid Libertarian with Lorianne Show. Please be sure to tune in Sunday nights from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, to discuss current events, news, and political opinion with Lucid Libertarian flair. Be prepared, folks. We often go into an optional extended third hour. This show advocates for liberty, freedom, our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and limited government, while speaking against corporate and government corruption, tyranny, and the globalist Great Reset agenda that undermines our precious American sovereignty. Discussions here are unscripted and free-flowing, so sometimes conversations wander off in unpredictable directions. Would you like to call in and share your thoughts and be part of the conversation? The number is 563-999-3698. Again, that is 563-999-3698. Press number 1 and you'll be added to the queue. Please also like and follow my Lucid Libertarian with Lorianne page on Facebook. You can help me battle their freedom-loathing censorship by visiting my page regularly, along with reacting, commenting, and sharing my posts. Thank you so much for listening, but please sit tight and don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a few minutes to kick off the show.
Imagine waking up in a trunk. What is grooming? What if I told you we had a 40% increase of human and sex trafficking in our country due to COVID lockdowns? We already had high numbers to begin with. One's Purpose is an amazing organization pounding the pavement every day helping these survivors get help. Unfortunately, they do not have the funding they need for a safe house. In the state of Oregon, we have zero safe houses for these survivors who have endured the most heinous of crimes. The time is now to get involved. The time is now to help stop human trafficking. Please go to onespurpose.com to get involved. If you need help and if you know someone who needs to get help, please contact 541-221-3448. Make a donation. Make a difference.
Sure, it's Friday night, but that is no reason not to tune in to NWCR Radio at 9 p.m. Eastern Time with Robert the Infidel Garding. Being around since 2007, we patriots have watched as the left and many on the right have done nothing to stop what is going on to destroy our great nation. Ideas abound with our society, but most are horrible at best. But there are good ideas out there if you know where to look. Join us every Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern for a dose of reality from behind the silver microphone of freedom with the voice of reason in this unreasonable world. That's NWCR Radio at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday evenings, where you can call in at 646-478-5284 and give your solutions to what is ailing this country.
Red.
There will always be war.
I am tired of the waiting. I can hear the record playing, but no music, just the need of heaven knows just how I feel. Cry, try, and try. Try, try, try. Try to face the river I cannot cross. That's only you and I. All the praying, all the pleading, on my bended knee, heart beating, we'll get past it, we'll pull through it. Wild horses couldn't do it. Try, try, and try. Try, try, yeah, it's your right. Try to face the river I came at your eyes. That's only you and I. And all the times I gave love,
everybody. You are tuned in to the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann Show. Thank you so much for making your way here tonight. And it looks like we got people on the switchboard already. We got people in the chat. And so everybody looks like they're starting to get ready to kick off tonight. We got a great show for everybody tonight. Regular listeners and some of the people out there already know that I am tonight welcoming my new special co-host, Valerie Serafin. She was my guest last week for the second time, and I was very much impressed with how well-spoken she is. She's knowledgeable. She's intelligent. She's got a great personality. So I decided to ask her if she might be willing to try on the co-host hat and be my second chair, and she has accepted to give it a good old college try. And so I'm going to bring her in shortly. So I want to welcome her to the show as my co-host. I'm hoping everybody will behave themselves, treat her nicely. Warning, she does have power of the mute button. So if you
get out of line, she will have the power of the mute button too, and also, you know, hopefully helping to be a second set of eyes for me, and you know, with keeping up with the chat and giving me a kick in the shins if I need to. And looks like we got more people funneling their way in, which is awesome. The song played was Color Me America by Dolly Parton. I'm sure everybody recognized her voice. One of my favorite songs of hers that's patriotic that I haven't played for a while. And then the second song was Gavin DeGraw, Face the River. Gavin DeGraw is one of my favorite artists. I met him twice. I have all of his albums. He's just an incredible singer and artist. He's on tour right now in Europe and having some good crowds show up. So if you've never been familiar with Gavin DeGraw, I encourage you to check out some of his music. You can always find him on YouTube, Gavin DeGraw. There's so many great tunes of his, but Face the River is one of his latest ones off of his latest album. After taking a break after a couple of years, he lost his parents, and so this was his first album that he produced after losing his parents and time there, but he's back on track and on tour now, so definitely check him out. And so with that, I just, you know, can't play songs and not say who it is and why I played it, right? So, chat room, Robert, we got a lot of Roberts. Robert is from right here in Oregon. Valerie knows him. I'm going to go ahead and bring Valerie into the fold here. Hello, Valerie. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for agreeing. I wasn't
well,
sure
we
when
shall
I asked
see
you,
how
I was
long
like,
that
well,
thank you lasts.
Well, it doesn't hurt to ask.
Well, you might regret that decision here soon, so we'll see.
Well, thank you for the warning.
I need to walk around
with
a disclaimer.
I don't think I have too much to worry about with you. Don't we all? No, but I'm really glad to have you on. I think this is going to be fun. And, you know, I don't anticipate any problems with you. So, you know, just saying. I think that I have a high opinion of you, and I think that it's worthy, put it that way. And let's see. We got several topics that we have in mind tonight. But as usual, we'll see what we get to and what we don't. And it looks like we have Mike raising his hand. By the way, all you out there listening, if you want to call in, 563-999-3698, you can just kick back and listen. But when you want to chime in, press 1 on your keypad, and that will raise your hand on the switchboard, and that will let Valerie and I know that you want us to bring you on. So I'm going to go ahead and bring on Mike. I think Mike might want to welcome you. Mike, you are on.
Hello.
Happy Sunday.
Hello, ladies. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
You know, happy Sunday to you too, man. Mhm.
Very
great
good.
Music
and then
for
we
him.
Got Gunslinger. Yeah, I love Gavin DeGraw. He's awesome. Gunslinger is also raising his hand, so I'm going to go ahead and bring him into the fold as well to join the party. Gunslinger, how you doing?
Well, it's definitely a good party. It's a party weekend because the Wicked Witch of the West is burning in hell. Praise God. Okay.
Yeah, we got rid of one of them. That was one of the topics of conversation is Feinstein is we are no longer having the Feinstein rule in the Senate any longer. And, of course, like, I kind of got a little irritated because Jo Jorgensen, libertarian, she was the presidential candidate in the last elections, Joe Jorgensen was, you know, honoring Dianne Feinstein's, you know, over 30 years or whatever, and a career and stuff. And I was like, wait a minute. We have the former Libertarian presidential candidate praising this woman, you know, like the tyrant that she always was, this anti, you know, so anti-gun, like, you know, she literally had said, you know, if I could do it, I would just ban guns outright. You know, we would do entirely away with the Second Amendment. And Joe Jorgensen is honoring this woman. Really? You know, I found that pretty surprising.
Remember what one of her famous lines was, if I had the vote, I'd have Mr. and Mrs. American turn them all in. She wasn't talking about chickens. She talked about guns. Why do you think I'm called the gunslinger? Okay? This, she's always had done this. Ever since she got into the Senate, her entire career, her main focus has been on doing away with the 2A, the Second Amendment. The very thing that made this country. There's three things that made this country. God, guns, and guts. And she was trying to do away with the damn guns. What an anti-American commie bastard she was. I'm glad Satan is welcome. The gates of hell have just opened for her, no doubt. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, and I've got a quick thing I can play for that. This is in honor of Dianne Feinstein and her long-time career being a tyrant. Here we go. I thought that was appropriate. How do I honor her? Yeah, so at least one of the wicked witches of the West in the Senate is gone. I'm just waiting for Pelosi to be next because, you know, she's not the epitome of health either. I'm sure her liver is on its last legs at this point. Anywho, so yeah.
She also might have what do you want to call that stuff? Because of all that ice cream, all the sweet, all that designer ice cream she has. What's that disease? I'm blanking on the name of the disease now. Yeah, you eat too much sweets and you have to have
diabetes.
Maybe. Diabetes. Yep. She might have diabetes.
Well, I'm sure she does.
That could be. That could be.
It's almost like that Christmas music, Carol. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That's the nicest thing you ever done for me, you know. I forget who sang it.
Break out that guitar there, gunslinger. Oh, my goodness. So it has been an eventful week. Oh, go ahead, Valerie. What you got to say?
Oh, I wasn't saying anything. I was just listening to y'all celebrate a little bit more. I don't know what you would call it. I was just listening to y'all.
Yeah, let's just hope that her replacement isn't even worse. That's kind of scary. Like, who's going to fill that spot, and how tyrannical is that person going to be?
Yeah, and I don't generally, I mean, I don't celebrate the passing of people. You know, it's still a life, but, you know, at the same time, I am absolutely celebrating that she is no longer in the position that she is. because the amount of damage that she has done over the years, she did not deserve that office. And it is
you got to look
not
at
a bad
it like
thing
this.
That she's gone.
It's a good thing because this
yes,
thing
is
not human. It's not. She's not human. Because a human being would not try to tear down the country, the very country that she lives in, the very country that gave her the position what she is right now, or was, okay? This thing is not human. I do not consider herself, or I do not consider her as a human being, because a moral human being would not do that. A devil, a Luciferian, a demonic plagued thing. Now that would do that, trying to tear down the very country that, you know, they gave her that position. So it's a celebration when one of these demonic things are called back to hell and to rot in hell for forever. I'm clapping my hands. I'm dancing around the room. Yay. One at
well,
a time.
I would definitely say that she was not a moral human being. You know, she definitely was self-serving and did not care about the people of this nation or her state. She did not care about the rights that they possessed. She had her own agenda. She was definitely not a good, I would not call her a good person.
No.
By any stretch of the imagination.
Flat out liar. Whenever she took her oath of office, every single time.
Right. Now, guys, listen to this though. There's a couple of theories that are making their way around the internet that I've seen, and about her seat. Okay. Number one is that different things, but number one is that. What's his name out there? The governor has to will appoint somebody. Of course, he has to. That's the law. He has to appoint somebody to that seat, right? To serve out the rest of her term. Now the rumor is he's going to appoint Kamala Harris to that seat. Hamilton, you know, knee pad, as me and Gunn would call her. So.
Nope.
Yep. And so if he appoints her to that seat and she accepts it, she's going to step down as vice president to take that seat and probably run for her own term, her own get back in the Senate there, and then probably what's going to happen is they're going to appoint a new vice president. Which will end up probably being what's his name in California, the governor. So that's the game of musical chairs that they're going to play with this thing, you know. So and look, Kamala, I don't think Kamala wants to be president. She might have wanted to be president at one point, but I don't think she wants to be president because she knows. She knows what it takes, and she knows that she doesn't have what it takes to do that job. So we'll see what happens with this. But those are the ideas that are going around the internet. Kamala's going to be the new senator, and he's going to be the new vice president.
That would be interesting, an interesting scenario. You know, and it's one of those things where I think with Kamala, maybe one of the big reasons why she doesn't really want to be president is because she knows she's not wanted. You know, it's like, why would you go into a job knowing that nobody wants you, not even the people in your own party want you to be president, and so why would you want to step into that position? As a senator, I could see that, you know, but you know, she's going to obviously be slanted with her history being a prosecutor. But
right.
Who knows?
So a couple years ago, when Gavin Newsom replaced Harris, Kamala Harris, with a Latino gentleman, he then pledged that he would select a black woman to fill any future vacancies. And that was a pledge that he made a couple years back, which is kind of, you shouldn't be choosing somebody to fill a vacancy based on their skin color. That's kind of the very thing that we're trying to be fighting against in this country, is filling positions based on the color of skin. I mean, can you imagine if he were to sit there and say that he was going to fill a position with a white person? That would not go over too well.
Oh, exactly. There'd be hell to pay, you know. I'm only going to select white people. I mean, can you imagine the outrage that people would, you know, like, what?
What?
Some reason it's okay with other, I'm only going to fill these positions with people of color, and that's it, you know. And it's like, it's kind of like, well, isn't that discrimination based on race right there in and of itself?
Right. And they do the same thing. Remember what they did to Romney when he said he had binders full of women to choose from for whatever job, for vice president or for whatever job that he was going to, you know, do for his government, for his presidency. And now he didn't win, but that's what he said. I have binders full of women, qualified women, trying to play the Democrats' game when the Democrats are pros at the game, right? They're pros at trying to, a black woman, a black person, a woman, a Hispanic, a Latino, Asian, a gay person, you know. X, Y, Z, A, B, C, and they play that game all, the Democrats play that game, the liberals play that game all the time, trying to cobble together a bunch of different groups of people into a party, right? Now we're starting to see that this is starting to go away, because a lot of these people are now seeing what the Democrats are for, or the liberals are for, and they're saying, you're going after your political enemy, putting him in jail on bullshit charges, or trying to put him in jail on bullshit charges. Also, going after Trump, trying to take away his business license and his businesses, you know, and all this shit, it's bullshit. People are seeing that, and you know, the blacks and the Hispanics and stuff and such are leaving him in droves. That's why they're fucking, you know, having them open borders, you know, because they're trying to replace all these people that are leaving them, all the people that are here and came over legally the right way, and they're already here, and they don't. The people who don't like the open border the most are the Hispanics, the Cubans, and stuff like that are already here.
Yeah, right? And went through everything the right way.
Yep.
Not to interrupt, but I do have a couple people raising their hands. I see Cinnamon is raising her hand. So I'm going to go ahead and bring Cinnamon on, and then I will bring on the Skype number here next. Cinnamon, how you doing, hon? Good to see you raise your hand.
I'm doing well. Just wanted to say hi to everybody.
Hello.
Usually
you're kicking back listening.
Yeah, one of the other weird rumors about who's going to replace Feinstein is Meghan Markle is being said to be being pressured by Gavin Newsom to fill in. Wouldn't that just be a lovely little, good God. That'd be like AOC
Lovely.
Only with a husband.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Duck Northwest said, Robert, Conservative Nation Media, said that there's rumors about Oprah. I don't know if Oprah, you know, for Oprah, I think it would almost be beneath her. And then let's find out who we have raising their hand. That's the Skype number. I wonder if it might be Sarge.
No, unfortunately.
Hello, hello.
Yo, what's up?
Hey, who do we got?
Juan Diaz.
Sound like you're kind of yawning.
Yeah.
Juan Diaz.
Come on, man. Stop it. What's up, Cinnamon?
You sounded like you were yawning.
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Nah, man. I'm drinking my beer. That's all. Anyway, it seems like you guys click on a lot of stuff. Like, come on, man. Oprah, come on, y'all. Meghan Mark, come on. Barbara Lee is already chastised.
I don't see it happening either.
Gavin Newsom. Yeah, no, Barbara Lee has already chastised Gavin Newsom about that comment about who he was going to pick and the fact that she should be in the running. She's one of the people in the running, but he had a bunch of people, younger people, Dems from L.A. County. Y'all already know. Those are the people most likely to be pushed up to it. But Kamala Harris is not dropping back to be a senator from vice. She's not giving that up. She's vice with a really, really old president. Like, she's not giving that up.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up Barbara Lee's chastising of Gavin Newsom, because he had made a comment, or he had stated that whoever he chose to fill in would be an interim. He wasn't looking for somebody that was going – he's not looking for somebody that will be running again. So he's just looking for somebody to be a placeholder, and – Barbara Lee pushed back on that. She had stated that the temporary appointment of a black woman would just be mere tokenism, that the people of California deserve the best possible person for that job, not a token appointment. She's definitely pushing back on that.
How do you get somebody to not run after they're already appointed to do it? I mean, are they going to sign an agreement? I shall not run.
No, you just don't give them any money.
Why would you put somebody in that wouldn't want to run? Because while they're in there being a placeholder, they're not going to do anything.
Well, and it's an insult too. I'm going to put you in this position, but I don't think you're best for the job, because if I did think you were best for the job, I would support you running, or, you know, I would expect you to be running. So it's really just, it's a slap in the face, and I think it's just virtue signaling so that he can say that he held up his word and he filled that vacancy or the next vacancy with a black woman. And I think he's going to end up with some pushback on it from people, if he follows through.
Well, the unsaid here is he wants to know what the donors think. So that's going to be what determines who runs in the next one. But, hey, this is a step up from Blagojevich back in the day when Blagojevich said, hey, I got this thing I need to sell, when he was trying to sell a seat. So we're beyond selling a seat, at least we're understanding, like, the favor system that they kind of play out with. But if you get some young Dem who's in L.A. County doing, you know, whatever politically, if they can get that vacancy, that's a real resume bump for whatever they want to do later. So, I mean, this is, you know, this is horse trading 101. They're just playing the game, same as always.
Well, the whole thing,
like, that horse trading.
Horse trading, yeah. In fact, Texas horse trading, yeah. The what it boils down to, they don't care. I don't care who gets in there. They don't give a rat's rip. Look at the district that witch representative. Look at the district that Piglosi pig pens are cleaner. Okay? Pig pens are cleaner than those streets that these two idiots, one former, represents. It's like the streets of Keystone, Philadelphia. Okay? These people are... You want to know what the attack of the zombie apocalypse is going to look like? Go check it out. Skid Row, there's one right there. And it's getting worse by the days.
I hear you. But you go out to some of these hollers in rural areas, and when you get into that opioid area and also the heroin area, you're going to see the same thing. Only problem is in big cities, it's more concentrated, so somebody can walk through with a cell phone and say, look, it's the zombies again. And, again, by the way, this ain't Juan Diaz. This is Naj. I don't know what the hell's wrong with you.
I know it's you, Naj.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, what the hell is
I know it's
wrong
you.
With?
I recognize it. I just didn't recognize you right away at first because it sounded like, you know, like I said, like you were yawning or something and like, or just rolling out of bed. I don't know. So I
didn't
recognize
respect
you right
my
away.
Latino accent. That was my Latino accent, man.
It was a bad one then.
I tried.
An A for effort will give you a participation award.
Yeah, there we go.
I'll take it.
But nah, man, look. So the thing earlier I heard y'all talking about, what's her name, Feinstein. So the thing with Feinstein, I remember, is, okay, she passed. But, dude, this has been going on for the past 2.5, possibly 3 years, where basically her aides were rolling around a mummy and using her as a signing pin, selling off legislation to who knows who for who knows what. And you just basically had this senator that you could just use. And, you know, then you find out her family had already put in for her, what do you call it, the law, what do you call it when your family has to step in as you age? They had power of attorney over her. So you had a U.S. senator whose family had power of attorney over her. How crazy is that?
Conservatorship. So it's
a lot with that. It's a lot with that story. But I think you guys are really missing the story with the young people. Oh, but go ahead. Y'all know I talk a lot. So go ahead before I start.
Say, remember the last time that she voted, she had to be wheelchaired in, and she didn't even know what she was voting for. One of her aides had to say, push the button. Yes. Really? It's like poopy pants. Same thing. He ain't running the show. Okay, somebody's running the show for him because he's not capable of making rational decisions, especially in a position that both of them are in, especially poopy pants. Okay. Because his brain cells are gone.
Gun, I'm not going to let you get away with that when your man the other day said that windmills cause whales to die. Okay, y'all got to chill with this Biden senile stuff if y'all rolling out 45 as the guy who's sane and lucid.
Well, if you want to compare poopy pants to Trump, let's compare poopy pants to Trump. Okay. Trump knows where he is. Poopy pants don't. Trump doesn't sit there and shake hands with people that's invisible. Poopy pants does. The secret service there doesn't have to point which direction poopy pants to go. Here's your stairs, Mr. President. Go up these stairs and, you know, do this. Mr. Trump does not. Mr. Trump has all of his brain cells. Okay.
Okay,
he's
so
not a
with all his brain cells, he misstated the city he was in the other day. He started doing his story about men with tears in their eyes coming up to him crying and telling him they miss him so much. So I understand what you're saying, man, but come on, man. We got to be real about this.
Let's put it to the bottom line here. Okay, Trump is not God. I didn't see God on the ballot when I voted for him. Didn't see God on the ballot when I voted for him last time. All right. He's a human man. He's just like everybody else. He puts his pants on one leg at a time. He is susceptible to fuck-ups. You telling me you're perfect? You telling me I'm perfect? Fuck no. Okay, we all make mistakes. We all go down the primrose path. We all have listened to people that we have should not have listened to. Okay, every one of us in here has probably done the same thing, me included. Okay, he listened to the wrong crowd. Okay, Dr. Quack, calling Dr. Quack, Fucci. Okay, he listened to the wrong crowd. Now that he's already a shoo-in, he's already up 60%. Now when he gets back in there in 2024, he's going to have 4 years to say, hey, I ain't listening to you, sumbitch. We're going to bring in some real experts. Okay.
Okay. So let's square the circle. Let's square this. Hold on, Gunn. Let's square the circle. So you're telling me when he was in office, everything was rigged and the votes didn't matter because they cheated. And now that he's out of office, the other guy is in, and he's a guarantee to win because you read some polling that leans to the right that tells you what you want to see. You see what I mean?
No, because in 2016, when he first said he was running, okay, people had enough. People was about ready to explode like a bomb. You know that old tick, 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 tick situation? I mean, people was tired of this Republican, Democrat. You know, same old shit, same old people in there, okay? Those people have been in there for many years. They've gone roots. They've grown roots. The people wanted a new sheriff in town, like the old saying goes. Well, they got it in 2016, okay? And he started kicking ass.
And then they found out, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Like, you're not going to get anything different voting for somebody under either one of those banners. So to even, like, the whole outsider thing doesn't work anymore because he's running on the record that he actually established. So Operation Warp Speed, that's a part of his legacy. Good or bad, whatever you think about, you know, the vaccine, that's a part of his legacy. Now, you can, you know, poo-poo it and say he didn't know any better and they told him stuff, but, I mean, it's pretty hard to hear where you're coming from.
What else is a part of his legacy? The biggest tax cuts in history, part of his legacy.
Big mistake.
Overturning of Roe v. Wade.
We're paying for that right now.
Building the wall. These idiots are trying to destroy this country.
Wait a minute. Did you just say building the wall? Man, come on.
I've been in construction. I'm a master electrician, retired electrical engineer. Okay? I know how walls are built. I know how freaking buildings are built. Okay? Walls do work. Okay? Look at these other countries over there that have walls around their country. Okay? You try to get into one of them places, they'll shoot your ass, okay, and laugh about it. High five. Good shot there, buddy, local soldier or whatever they are over there, okay? We don't want these people coming into this country that are thugs, that are dope heads, that are the scum of the country.
I'm going to be honest with you. Most of the illegal people I've met, it was people working in restaurants, people working at local little stores, and just trying to get by doing what they do. But to the bigger part of the conversation, the only time we saw a decline in people coming over the border was during COVID when nothing was really moving. But besides that, during the Trump administration, they were still coming too. So this idea that he stopped them, like, no, they didn't happen. They were still coming in.
Go back and look at the numbers during Obama and look at the numbers during Trump.
Yeah.
They went down.
I'm telling you, you don't want to walk down this road. Obama deported 2.5 million. That's why the people on the left, the actual progressives who were so mad at him and the Democrats, they called him deporter in chief. He ran on it too.
I live here in Texas. I'm a border state.
Yes, sir.
Okay, just like all the other border states are. Elon Musk went down there a few days ago, early part of this
Wonderful
week, I guess. He interviewed the local sheriff and the border patrol chief down there, and he said that if you could go out, it's on YouTube. Go listen to it for yourself. 15-minute interview there.
He said
the day before, 22,000 people came across that Rio Grande down there. I think they ought to put alligators down there. Okay. 22,000 people, okay, that are non-citizens. They have no rights in this country. And they want to come over here and suck on the government tit is what they want. They'll take, you know, come on, we're full. We don't need any more. Now, that's 22,000 people in one day. One single day.
Loriana, I know I'm talking too much, so I'm going to wait a couple of turns before I jump back in because I know I'm talking too much on this show.
That's fine.
Got to let everybody know.
I was hoping to get an opportunity anyways. I want to bring in Robert, who's local. Robert has his hand up, and so I'm going to go ahead and bring Robert in. Come on. You are on the air, Robert. How you doing tonight? Are you there? Are you struggling to find your mute button?
Nope. I think I muted myself. You guys hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
All right, there you go. Sorry, I started out.
Welcome aboard.
I appreciate you having me on. Yeah, the Trump discussion always gets my cackles up because everybody acts like he is like this staunch conservative and he's done all these great things, and the fact of the matter is the guy is the crux of the Republican Party, in my opinion. The man has been he was walking the Democrat line, the socialist agenda for most of his life. That's just the reality of it. He hasn't done nearly the good things a lot of people want to give him credit for. You know, he really didn't. He slowed down some of the people going across the border. I heard you guys talking about. He didn't. It's not like he stopped stuff. The guy he allowed the not only just like the actual mandates to go into effect, but I mean, you guys talk about Operation Warp Speed. He Operation Warp Speed the fucking liberties of Americans away. That's what he really did. He knew that there were other ways to fight the disease. He even used them for himself and for his family and did not ensure that the American public had access to the same treatments that he used and followed the World Health Organization's and CDC's recommendations under fucking shit-ass Fauci. Let's not pretend like he is some kind of a good president or liberty-minded president. He absolutely is not. He's the first person to institute all those mandates. He shut down fucking America. He shut down our economy after sure building it up some, but let's be realistic. Obama actually already had the economy building before he left. So everybody gives Trump a bunch of credit for building the economy, but in reality, he took over a booming economy, whether you like to believe that or want to believe that or not. That's reality. And to be clear, I'm not an Obama fan at all. In fact, I can't stand the fucking guy. But that doesn't mean that you can't give him some credit where credit is due, and he did take over a booming economy. And he is the first president, Trump was the first president in 30-some-odd years to institute a ban on accessories for firearms. Let's not give this guy credit where he's some kind
exactly.
of a liberty-minded individual. He's fucking not. He's absolutely
exactly.
fucking not. The guy, he's not pro-2A. He's not pro, American health. He's not pro medical freedom. He's not, I mean, none of that shit. The guy is a fucking clown shit. And in my opinion, I think that he was probably put there to make people think that he was a good thing. But in reality, we lost liberties under Trump. The only thing that I can give Trump credit for is the fact that he brought in people onto the SCOTUS that have been able to turn some things around and have been able to unfuck some of his situations. So that's the way I look at it. Trump is not a good dude.
I hear you on all that. And not to totally thwart the conversation, but I do have a Skype number raising their hand. So I want to find out who it is and bring them on into the party. Hello, Skype number. You are unmuted. Who do we got? Are you there? You're on air.
Silence is deadly.
Skype number? I don't know. They were waiting
for a while. I followed
the
advice to mute my phone. I mute my phone because I'm told that what I must do. And then you caught me by surprise saying you're on, so I got to turn the phone on, turn the screen on so I can see it, and then hit the mute button. Unmute.
Thanks,
sorry. Yeah, hang that line up.
Love catching you by surprise.
Yeah. You know what? You can't handle the truth, so you definitely don't want me to talk. But look, whenever I hear the stuff about immigration, people tell me that borders and walls don't work. You know, I mean, I have to laugh. There's not a single one of these people. There's not a single one of these people who does not have a wall and a door in their home. Not one of them. And the moment anything would happen to cause it to be damaged, they would repair it immediately. See, here's the thing about this discussion about a wall. When you're defending your border or any perimeter, you have a defense in depth. You don't rely on any one thing. You don't rely on just the wall. You don't rely on just patrols. You don't rely on just drones. You don't rely on just dogs or any other measures. One, they are all integrated into a comprehensive system, the wall probably being the most important single thing. And that's what gets me about this discussion. They don't want the wall because the wall is effective, if for no other reason than to slow down people as an obstacle which they must breach in order to get in, which gives you more time to catch them before they can get there. I mean, believe me, anybody who understands anything about a defense in depth knows this to be true. It's not even arguable. Nobody says when I was on a perimeter in a combat zone, I didn't think, oh, the concertina wire is going to keep them out, or the landmines are going to keep them out, or the pre-registered artillery fire is going to keep them out. You integrate the whole damn thing into your defense plan, and that's what a border is. It's the same thing. It's all of them working together. And as a matter of fact, during the last year of the Trump administration, the number of border encounters, and let me define a border encounter. This is what the Border Patrol says a border encounter is. Three categories: apprehension, the temporary detainment of people by the Border Patrol who cross the border illegally between ports of entry. Now, some of them may or may not be arrested under Title 8. These people, under what's going on now with this corrupt bastard, are able to file for asylum status. Then you got inadmissibles, who are people encountered at ports of entry by customs and the like, seeking lawful admission in the United States but are found ineligible for entry under Title 8. These could be people that are looking for humanitarian protection and people who voluntarily withdraw their admission applications. And finally, there are expulsions, people who were denied exclusively through Title 42 to stop the spread of COVID, and now that's over. So with those three categories of encounters in mind, during the last year of the Trump administration, last month of the Trump administration, January 2020, the number of encounters at the border was under 30,000 a month. Under 30,000. The number of encounters right now as of April 2023, is somewhere in the neighborhood of 230,000 to 240,000 a month, and it's only been going up. The border is not secure. The border is not stable. The border is wide, bloody open, deliberately, because it is a cloud-pivot strategy to destroy the United States by overwhelming systems, using immigration as a policy, or rather illegal immigration, as a policy to do it. It is beyond any dispute or any measure if you believe in objective measurements.
Okay, so first things first.
I'm going to bring Joe Gibson into the fold here, too. I got Joe Gibson raising his hand here real quick. And sorry to interrupt you there, Don, but I'm bringing Joe Gibson in.
So first things first, good job, Sarge, winning the argument nobody was having. The discussion was never about do walls work. Nobody said that. Nobody was having that discussion.
Oh, well, you may not say, but many other people do.
No, you had a long time. Hold on. Save your breath.
They don't work. Walls don't work. They don't keep anybody out.
I'm not arguing that they do, sir, or don't.
I didn't say you were. I didn't say you were.
Okay.
I said there's an argument against it. We don't need to waste the money. It's a waste of money to put up a wall. That's what they say.
Uh-huh. So if you want to push against what Sarge is saying, go look up the Heritage Foundation and their documentation of Trump's ability to stop immigrants from coming over. And you'll see that it's similar to what the same numbers as Democrats when it was coming over. The only dip you see was during COVID. Again, I sent you to the Heritage Foundation. I didn't send you to a lefty website. I sent you to the Heritage Foundation. Now, the real discussion here to be had is what? Why are they coming over and how do they benefit when they do come over? Now, when you start talking about growing harvest season and everything else, the people who hire them, and when we go to chicken processing plants and all these other different jobs that Americans can't live on and pay a wage so low and sometimes even pay people under the table that the only way they can sustain the business is by bringing in illegals, you get an idea on why Dem Repub, nothing changes as far as people coming over. And then you won't fall into this con game people like to run where they tell you, I'm tough on the border. I'm going to close it up. I'm going to do this and that. If you really wanted to close it, what you would do is say any business who violates this and brings in and hires one of these people, we're going to fine you for, you know, a huge amount of money or take your ability to practice business in this state. We're going to suspend your business license in this state if you hire one of these people. If you did that, you would stop it immediately because those people are coming over here to what? Find a life, get a job, make some money, and live a life, send the money back home.
Not true.
Don't act like we can't even track this. We can track the money. Go look at some of these old school. Oh, I hear you. I hear you, Joe. You'll have your turn next. Just calm down. Relax a little bit. It's you.
Oh, I'm calm. I'm calm.
It's not going to take me long to beat up both of you. But anyway, when you look at these companies, go back to those old school companies, MoneyGram, Western Union, these companies where you would transfer money. Hell, now you can update it to Zelle and Cash App and everything else. You can actually find where these people are, who they're sending money to, and everything else if you really wanted to stop it. The main point here is the donors, the people who run both parties, Repub and Dem, they don't want to stop it. That's why it doesn't stop. And y'all still don't get it because they just give y'all this nonsense. They're telling y'all they tough and they going to stop it. And then every year, every 4 years, it's still the same. So, yeah, y'all keep falling for the banana in the tailpipe, man. I'm done.
Who's not trying to stop it, though? What are you talking about? Who's not trying to stop it?
The Republican Party and the Democratic Party are not trying to stop it because they are being pressured by their donor class, the people who not only hire these people, but the reason that these people are coming up here. That's why. Now, if they actually cared about really stopping it, those are the people they would address.
So what's your conclusion then? How do you fix the problem then? What's your recommendation of fixing the problem?
The lobbyists are in control of it all. Corporate exactly. America, the people that are donors, he's absolutely 100% fucking right on that. It has nothing to do with party politics at all. It is absolutely 100% controlled by the donors, by the lobbyists.
Yeah,
the lobbyists control the fucking nation. 100%.
We agree. What's the solution?
We have to hold their feet to the fire and get a comprehensive and easier immigration system. So the people that want to come here and stay here and be American citizens can get in here.
We have that already.
No, we don't. It's a 10-year wait.
We have it. It's just not being enforced.
No, they have to jump through
hoops.
The one person that I know of, it took them 10 years to become an American citizen. So we have to, first, we have to fix that. We also have to go after the companies that want
to. Because the gridlock of the system, that's why, 10 years, yes, because the system, because it's all gridlocked in through nonsense. Come back to court 80 times, you know?
So a system that can find the $100 bet you made on DraftKings, you telling me that system can't find it? Like, dude, stop falling for the – why do you keep falling?
Well, people can get lost in the system. It's not that hard to get lost in the system.
They've been screaming about fixing the immigration system since Ronald Reagan gave amnesty the last time for the illegal immigrants that had come over, for them to be able to stay, gave amnesty. And that was supposedly they were going to agree to go ahead and start doing anything from the immigration for the immigration system, and they haven't
but
done
the
it.
Talking
that right
point,
there is your
but
red
the talking
flag
point,
that they don't care to do it.
The talking point, yes, but the talking points that the conservatives are using is what needs to be done. Whether or not they're trying to do it, really do it or not, is irrelevant. The point being is that the liberals,
no,
their
that's
talking
the most
points,
relevant
are totally
part.
Insane.
No, that's the most relevant part. Whether they do it's do or do not. What did Yoda tell you? Like, no, them rallying votes and telling you that they're going to do something and they're not doing it. Yeah, that's very important. Look, I'll tell y'all something that I've told Lorianne on the show before, but I haven't told Sergeant knows this already. I ain't even got to give him the information. But just look up the average age of Americans, and you can compare it to Germany because they're another older country. We're really old. Our birth rate is really low. So what does that mean? Replacement level. We don't have a really good replacement rate at this point. We're aging out, and what do you do when you're doing that? You bring in low-wage, cheap workers who you can tell the American dream to. You tell them you're on fries now, and if you keep working hard, buddy, sooner or later you'll be managed. You can't tell the average American that, but you can tell an immigrant that.
Yeah, but again, though, again, yes, I understand what you're saying, that it's a corrupt system and that it's not being enforced or it's a broken system. I get all that, and I understand the Republican and Democrat, so the same money funds both parties. I get all that. But the talking points that the liberals use, open borders, they just don't want – come on, you can't sit here and tell me that their policies that they're openly stressing and talking about are the same as the Republicans.
Okay.
Guys.
Okay. So let's look at their records. The past two presidents that were Democrats, what were their records for deportation?
That's not what I'm arguing. I'm agreeing with you. The same. But the talking points is what I'm saying is
okay.
What they're telling people.
Guys, what also needs to happen is you need to destroy the donor class and the other class. There are two classes and the lobbyist class. You need to destroy both of those classes to possibly get some of this stuff done, because if you don't destroy the donor class, well, there you go. If you don't destroy the lobbyist class, you've got to destroy both of these classes of people, or else nothing's going to get done.
Wait a second here. If I own a business, I'm a small business owner. Hang on. If I'm a small business owner and I grow my business and I become successful and I become a multimillionaire, why can't I fund my beliefs? Why can't I support my beliefs and push them forward? Why am I not allowed to do that?
Joe, you said multimillionaire. That's not enough. You're not in the donor class as a
multimillionaire. Just using that as an example.
Well, the point is, if we lay it out so people can understand what we're saying, we're not talking about the average small business owner. We're not talking about the person who made well and then turned, you know, a simple, you know, little transaction into a couple million. We're not talking about that person. We're talking about whales, the people with the ability to determine things, especially when it comes to political parties. Y'all heard Gavin Newsom up there? Well, we just want an interim person because we're going to wait till the next. Why? Because he has to wait for what the donors are going to say. That ain't the small potatoes, regular guys, Joe. That ain't
oh,
the guy
so you
who
agree that these parts? So you agree? So you agree that these big people that control everything are these big elite bankers and whatnot?
Once you get these big corporations, you're going to stop there, right? You're not ever going to go any lower than that, are you? I don't believe you for a microsecond. Not one.
I knew that was
you just start there and you work your way down. You work your way down. You start with the class warfare. We're only going after fat cats. And then the next thing you know, you're going after lower middle income people because that's where the money is.
That's where the money is?
Please.
You believe that?
Yeah, that's where the money is.
Okay.
The rest of it is either sheltered or protected, or it's with some form of trust. And they can't get to it legally, not right now. So they got to go after the hard-working Joe who makes a paycheck that they can garnish a tax from. I'm not fooled by these tactics. I've seen them over decades. They start with the fat cats, and then they work their way down once they get their foot in the door.
Can you tell me at any point in American history where we have started with the fat cats and restricted them in any way? Can you tell me when that happened?
Yeah, the income tax.
They told the income tax.
They told us, it was only going to affect maybe 3% of income earners in the United States. That's what they said. 3%.
Sorry. You remember history, when they sued, they broke up the Rockefellers and the Carnegies and the J.P. Morgan's businesses. Remember when they broke them up and then Ford was trying to get in there to make his car and they wouldn't let him, the patent, they said, you know, no, you don't own the patent, we own it, you got to pay us a royalty. And then they allowed Ford as a small business guy to expand. You know, you remember that, Sarge?
Wait a minute.
So you think that class was people of aggrieved people?
Wait a minute. Well, let's go on further.
They don't pay income tax. For one
tell
person.
Me something, sir.
I can't believe
remember? Do you
this.
But wait a minute, Naj. Do you not remember that withholding on your income tax began as a quote temporary unquote wartime measure? They said they were going to end withholding from your paycheck after World War II. Did they? No.
Nope.
Don't ever believe these people when they talk to you about taxes and increasing any sort of tax regimen on you. They are lying. They are deceiving. They are only using it as an entree into what they're going to do next.
So, again, number two, Sarge has introduced the question and then argued with himself about the question. I never said anything about taxes. You did.
No, you said starting, you're only worried about the big growth, not the guy who just makes a few million with an entrepreneur startup. You just said that, Naj. I just heard you. So you're only worried about the really enormous big corporate interests. You don't want to go after anyone else. I don't believe that you're serious or you're being misled by your handlers.
Okay. So
why don't we keep this from turning into the – One second, you guys. Let's keep this from turning into the GOP debate.
I don't think Naj has handlers. Number one.
Sitting here drinking a damn beer, smoking a cigarette.
But to Sarge's point about the lies, didn't they say about the income tax that it wouldn't go above like 20%?
No,
they didn't say that because the tax rate was much higher at the beginning. No, it came
down.
Yeah,
it was 90% beyond a certain point.
Right.
It was 90% on income beyond a certain level. I forget what that threshold was, but it was enormous. It was disincentivizing to even earning money or expanding your business.
No, it was disincentivizing to the idea of legacy. The idea was, this is America. We're not going to do the England parliamentary thing or the monarchy thing, and we're not going to have a class of nobility.
Oh.
So this wasn't about saying tax those people who make this or that. This was saying we shouldn't have something like Citizens United where the whales of this country can decide policy. We shouldn't have organizations like ALEC where they write up legislation and have a senator sign it. We shouldn't have things of that nature. And that's what happens when you have monopolies in a country and you don't limit them in any way. We know this.
That rationale was a fig leaf. That's all it was. It was a fig leaf rationale. They weren't sincere. They got to start somewhere, and they're not going to start with a radical new program that upends everything that came before. So they had to do work with policies of gradualism, and that's what they did. And are doing.
Yeah, I don't want to take up all the damn air on the show. I know other people got things to say. I'll wait to respond to Sarge. I'm definitely not ducking what he's saying.
I just want to point out too that with the Biden administration and the American Rescue Plan Act, you know, they're all like, yeah, we're going to go after these fat cats. We're going to go after the rich. Blah blah blah.
Right.
And then what do they turn around and do? Stick the IRS on Americans earning more than $600 on PayPal, Venmo,
like these
are the small businesses. These are the people that, like, in their spare time, they make their own necklaces and, you know, and bracelets and shit like that, and sell them on eBay. And you know, so these are the small-time people, and so now we're going to hire a bunch of IRS people to go after people and report income over $600 on, you know. And so it's like that's just a slap in your face right there. Like, you know, so I agree with Sarge whenever a politician is like, we're going to go after the fat cats, we're going to go after the rich and the millionaires so that they can pay their fair share, you know it's a damn lie, because that's
exactly
the next thing
right.
I do is something like this.
Because they're doing it to me right now.
They always do it that way. Always.
If
history is replete with examples of it.
Yeah, if it's coming from the grassroots, it's legit. If you're saying a Dem or a Repub says it, yeah, I would look and laugh in the same manner. Now, all of us on this phone, if you call the IRS when we get off this call, guess what? A person is going to pick up. Why? Because they have more employees now. Before, they had cut the staff in half. Now they've increased that. Now, as far as what Lori Ann was talking about, the $600, that was technology being head of government. The Cash App and Zelle and the way that people can move money, that scared the hell out of them. So they had to try to figure out a way, okay, how do we find out who has what?
Who's breathing?
And what are they doing? Yeah, I don't know who that's breathing. You all right? You all right?
Me.
Yeah, who's the heavy breather?
You good?
Oh.
Yeah, but to walk away from this, like when you bring these things up, people say, oh, you're trying to start a class war. Dude, class war has been going on since the founding of this country. We just on the other end of the bayonet. I don't know why y'all don't get it.
Well, that's an argument I didn't make, Naj, as you just famously told me a minute ago. I said they are using the class warfare rationale in order to justify the new measures they are taking. We're only going after those rich plutocrats over there. That's what I was saying. I'm not saying class warfare isn't going on. I'm saying they are using the rationale of going after the plutocrats, the bourgeoisie. That's who they're going after. Well, we're not going at anybody else, but it never turns out that way. It never winds up that way.
I agree with that point, Sarge.
Okay, good. I'm glad we have common understanding. I'm grateful for it.
Okay, who's that?
It's class warfare. I mean, look, the attractions of class warfare are endless. I can understand its appeal to so many people. A lot of it is grounded in resentment and envy and jealousy. And, yes, there are many reasons to despise people who make a lot of money. I mean, I can't stand Bill Gates. I mean, I love the guy and a whole lot of these other people. But I'm talking about the principle. Never forget the principle, because there's people out there you don't like.
Yeah, I think that's way overplayed. I don't think most people have any idea about whatever jealousy or you know, whatever. I don't think that's how people feel. I think people feel like, okay, fair is fair. Why should this guy be able to? Remember that kid who ran over somebody drunk driving, and they said he was too wealthy to understand consequences and was able to walk? No, that was because he could afford, you know, a lawyer who charged a really high rate of billable hours. Now, does an average citizen get that kind of
What's going on?
No. So that's not a thing of hating the rich, man. Matter of fact, most people follow and love the rich. Hell, we got celebrity culture in this country, man. What do you mean? People don't hate the rich. People just want the rules to be fair. That's it.
Love-hate relationship. Love-hate relationship with the rich. That's what it is. It's a love-hate thing.
That's not me, man. I don't understand that type of thinking.
Like I said,
yeah, I
don't believe
when somebody like Oprah and The Rock start a charity to help the people in Maui. You know, we're multi freaking uber millionaires. But hey, all you little people, make sure to donate. We could pay for it ourselves, you know. I could sell, you know, 100 acres of my 1,200 acres and, you know, in Maui, and that would provide more than enough money. But, no, I'm not going to do that, right?
Okay, so here's what it says about the original promise. And it says, I get this, it says, Federal Taxation in American Short History. The tax base was originally set at 1%, and they promised that it wouldn't go above 1%. Well, what happened? this happened during the Taft administration, right? Taft was a Republican, right? So
yeah.
This happened in the Taft administration. So they promised they wouldn't go above 1%, and then what happened several years later? It was up at 20% or 30% or whatever it was in the 20s, right? Just before the
20s. I think you got that a little off. Our tax rate at one point was 90%. It didn't start off at 1 and then go to 90. It started off where they would come up with different reasons to fund things over the war.
That's not what I'm saying.
Go ahead.
Before World War One, to get this thing passed, they had to make a they made the American people a promise that it wouldn't go above a certain percentage, right? And then what happened after World War One when they had to pay off for the war? Well, they came in there and they said, okay, we'll go 20%. It won't go above 20%. Then after the 20s, what happened? It goes up again. It goes from 20 to whatever it went up to. And then by the time
that has nothing to do with the president. But that has to do with the Federal Reserve contracting the money and the money supply. That has nothing to do with it.
By the time Kennedy came in there, it was up at 80% or whatever it was, and he cut it down to, what, 60%, something like that, John F. Kennedy.
Kennedy does not control the monetary policies. The Federal Reserve controls all monetary policies.
Right, but tax rates, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the fact that they promised that the tax rate wouldn't go over a certain percentage, and then they lied about that. They said it wouldn't go over a certain percentage, and they lied about it.
Are you talking about state tax? State tax or federal tax? What are you talking about?
It has to be, because the first one was 3%, and this was during the Civil War. And this was, what, 1861?
Right. Federal Reserve then.
Let me say the bad thing that I guess you guys don't want to hear. Y'all know me. I always say the bad thing. So the bad thing is a modern state has to have an income tax system. Like you guys who are saying, okay, get rid of the whole tax system, no more taxes. Okay, that would mean your currency is now half devalued immediately. Because what taxes do is give the idea – well, I ain't going to say idea. They give the security of knowing – that a country is not only going to be here for the next 100 years, but that it will be funded. So that's why you want to buy an IRA or any government bond or stock from America, but you don't want to buy one from Venezuela. You don't know how long that government's going to be in place. You don't know if their currency is stable or anything else. So basically tax rates allow countries to do what? Use credit and buy against the future. That's how you get a nation state as powerful as America with an economy as big as America. So you can get rid of the tax system if you want to, but you're definitely not going to be a front-running country and a powerful country or anything like that, because now nobody has any reason to buy into you.
I'm not saying get rid of taxes. I'm just saying what happened at the time. I'm not saying I'm all for a flat tax, you know, something like that. You know, where everybody pays the same thing, all right, a flat tax. I would even be for
Well, you just bankrupted your country. You just bankrupted
I'm
your country.
I'm for no income tax. I'm libertarian. I'm for no income tax, with the exception of foreign-derived income, which is, you know, technically how it's actually supposed to be. It's not supposed to be applicable toward the average American.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm for no income tax. With, like I said, the exception of foreign-derived income. If you're an American working overseas and deriving your income over there, then you're subject to it. If you're a foreigner here in the United States working, then you're subject to it. Or if you're an agent of either one of those two, like you're the tax accountant or, you know, you're their spokesperson or representative or something like that, and so you earn your income based on foreign derived or, you know, income for either one of those people, you know, so essentially, but if you're just, you know, mom and pop, you have your own business right here in the United States, you, you know, work in the States, you live in the States, you, all your income is earned right here in the States, then the income tax should not apply to you, period, end of story. That's, you know, libertarian me here. So, you know, I would, you know, it would be a lot fairer if it was a flat tax, you know, of course. But I think the best thing to do is, you know, income tax, do away with it entirely. And if we want to cut the purse strings to government, if we want to actually shrink government and have limited government, you got to cut those purse strings. And those purse strings start with the income tax.
You got the Banking Act 1933, known as the Glass-Steagall Act. You can't go doing it. You just don't understand.
Glass-Steagall. Let's get into that, Joe. Okay, Glass-Steagall, my God. The Clinton administration, Robert Rubin, he's the one that got rid of it, which set the set up that financial collapse we saw in 2008. They got rid of Glass-Steagall, allowed banks to trade and gamble and speculate in any way that they wanted to, which set that up. But going back to Lorianne's point.
Naj, you left out another very important factor. I know you don't want to deal with Community Reinvestment Act. You don't want to talk about the baleful effect of that, do you?
No, we can talk about that too, because that gets.
I was trying to get to that.
Yeah, why do you think I'm?
I would like to talk about that.
Yeah, we can talk about predatory loaning and the fact that now it's illegal to do loans in the way that they did. That was one of the greatest exchanges of wealth we've ever seen.
No, it was the federal government.
Sir. You got to let me have my turn, man. If you can't jump in on my turn and tell me I'm wrong when I haven't even finished fleshed out the idea. I'll put some meat on the bones. Just relax. So when you get into that Community Reinvestment Act, the idea is, oh, some poor people were able to trick the bankers into giving them loans. No, they actually had documentation on when those loans would explode, when the balloon rate would come in on the mortgage, and then they would flip the home and sell it again and do the same thing to somebody else. So, no, it's a top-down situation. Let me finish the point I was making. So what Lorianne just said as far as getting rid of the tax, the moment you do that, you're talking about the U.S. dollar being worth half what it is. How does that happen? When you make that announcement, other countries across this globe who are flushed with U.S. dollars because it's the most stable currency, they immediately push U.S. dollars out of their central bank, and then they start holding euros or, I don't know, rubles or whatever, but they would get rid of their investment in U.S. dollars and stop holding them in their central banks, and you would collapse the economy. That's how
Okay, Naj,
when you talk about the U.S.
Naj,
go ahead,
Naj. I'm a person who does understand nuance, and I'm a person who understands that, you know, I don't try to blame anything on classes of people where it isn't appropriate, and that would include non-creditworthy mortgage borrowers. What I am looking at is the role of the United States government that enabled the human corruption opportunity that they created with the way they enforced the Community Reinvestment Act. Here's what happened, in case you seem to have forgotten or didn't know. What happened was Janet Reno's Justice Department twisted the arms of financial institutions who they deemed were not granting enough mortgage applications to people historically not considered worthy of them based upon objective credit criteria. As a result, these institutions that wanted to do things like divestments and investitures and mergers were told, we in the federal government are not going to allow you to do them. We will not give you approval for them unless you have a sufficient number of heretofore marginalized borrowers, otherwise known as people of color mainly, and you change your credit worthy standards, which they did so they could go ahead and do the things the federal government was keeping them doing unless they did it. Now, here's what happened. When you do that sort of thing, you get people who are not normally going to be considered for a loan, and you realize you're taking a big risk. So what they did was bundle them all up in something called derivative credit swaps and some other stupid hedge thing.
CDO.
They said, well, look, we're getting raped. We're getting raped. So we might as well lay back and enjoy it, and let's come up with this funky scheme in order to minimize the damage that this thing is going to do to us. So they came up with this corrupt entity called credit derivative swaps, all this other nonsense. And that's what more than any other single factor led to the economic collapse of 2008, when all these things went belly up, when all these mortgage holders decided to default on their payments.
They did that purposely because there is no risk. There is no risk. It's like the margin call that they did in the panic of 1908. Well, you know, so it's they're calling the loans due when they don't have to be, you know, from all the major investors and saying that there is a risk. There's no risk. The banks don't ever take a risk, ever, ever, ever. Okay? It's a money supply created out of thin air.
But the economy did when it happened. Hold on, man. I can clear all this up. I'm sorry, Sarge. You got that wrong. Not only do banks take risks, that was the biggest reason why we had to bail them out. They over-levered themselves with all of the bad stuff. So if it went good, they got paid, and if it went bad, they could just put their hands out and go to.
Yeah, they were too big to fail.
They were too big to fail.
Right.
So going back to what Sarge said about CDOs, this is how the CDOs work. CDOs were always a financial instrument. It just wasn't a problem because homes were considered AAA. That was a good investment. That was a thing that you wanted. So if you bundled a couple of those homes together, that was no problem. But the moment you limited how what the criteria was for people to be able to get the home, they structured these, and this is why they call these predatory loans. They structured the loans in a way to where they knew financially the person wouldn't be able to meet it, and then took those loans and bundled them together with other bad loans that were similar, and then sold it as a AAA product by basically getting a crediting agency in America. Either way, they got them to rate these as AAA, sold them globally, and then when everything went bust, that's why that financial problem spread all across the world. It wasn't just here. So, no, this wasn't a thing of poor people, being greedy. This was a thing of poor people being naive and set up for the fall. So they said, hey, here's a mortgage. You can pay it. Your paycheck covers it. It's no problem. You don't tell the person in 2 years when the balloon payment comes in, it's going to be double what it is now, and they won't be able to afford it. And then you kick them out, and you sell it again, and you do it again, and you do it again. So, no, this wasn't a thing from the bottom. It's from the top.
None of it would have ensued without the heavy hand of the federal government that put all of that on steroids. None of that would have happened. It was Janet Reno's Justice Department that pulled the trigger on expanding it so rapidly.
I don't know how you walk away from the table and see the bankers cutting up, carving up the American people and think the problem.
In response to the incentive they were given by the federal government. I'm not saying they weren't corrupt too. They were. But I'm saying none of that would have happened. The spark, the catalyst for it was the federal government putting these new strictures on these financial institutions.
See how sorry
yes, they're all corrupt. Don't get me wrong. Nash, these, as you say, these lenders were corrupt too. The corruption was largely engendered by the federal government's pressure on them.
Sarge, the Fed creates money by purchasing securities on the open market and adding the corresponding funds to the bank's reserves of all commercial banks around the country. The federal government has nothing to do with it. The Fed controls everything, which as we know is private. The federal government has nothing to do with it at all, whatsoever.
The federal government runs Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac under the auspices of the federal government.
Dude, I'm sure
even though they're both private entities.
I'm sure we're boring the hell out of everybody. You should watch The Big Short or Margin Call. You get an idea about all of this. That'll cover it all. Watch the Money Masters.
The 3.5-hour documentary explains the Federal Reserve all from zero to the end.
guys.
Lorianne, sorry for making your show boring. I didn't know we was going to get here.
No need to apologize. I was explaining to Valerie earlier, it's like we might have all these topics in mind to get to, but the show tends to take on a life of its own, and sure enough, that's what's happening. That's pretty much happens that way. And
guys,
I'm still trying to get used to not being live for 3 hours. We already only have 27 minutes left of the live broadcast. So it's going to be a while before I get used to the two-hour live instead of the three-hour like I'm used to. So in any case, no need to apologize. It's all good. It's great conversation. I think, you know, so long as everybody is having good conversation and not getting all nasty with each other and stuff and everybody takes their turns to speak, then it's all good.
But guys, listen, here's guys, think talked about the Community Reinvestment Act, but and you talked about how it what happened with Clinton, but that got passed in 1977. All right, now the Clinton administration did strengthen it, but it got passed by Carter, another poor Democrat choice, but that's neither here nor there. But,
Glass-Steagall was a good thing. It's a good thing it was passed. Clinton is the one who repealed it. And again, we can go to the lobby and you can look at Citibank, the people who funded him initially in his run to the presidency. You can look at Lehman Brothers. All of those people, they were involved in it. They were the ones who lobbied to get rid of Glass-Steagall so they could make the speculation and gambling that they wanted to. That's what they did.
Get rid of the federal government in America. Get rid of the Federal Reserve. Straight the fuck up.
The Federal Reserve is the crux
of everything. Absolutely everything. The Federal Reserve is why we're in the wars that we're in, why almost every war in our fucking national history has happened was because of the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve has come into every fucking nation that we've ever attacked and in one way or another got them a part of, attributed them, or somehow brought them into our Federal Reserve currency, or in some way gotten a bunch of fucking kickbacks, i.e. BlackRock, et cetera, et cetera, and they've put money into our system in that way. Our Federal Reserve is what has dissolved our entire fucking government.
The evil core of all of it. Yeah, I agree with that.
The Federal Reserve was the downfall of fucking America. When our dollar started going to fucking the petrodollar and fiat fucking currency, it ruined our fucking nation. Straight the fuck up.
So Robert, do you think we're going to have some shares in the sugar beets and the wheat grown in Ukraine and some of their public institutions will become privately owned by United States companies? You think that's going to happen, Robert?
Hell yeah!
I think that it already fucking has happened, and the reality is, we own all the fucking medical facilities over there and all that shit too. I mean, let's just be fucking realistic on it. I mean, let's not forget
the tens of billion dollars it's going to take to rebuild the infrastructure of Ukraine that's been blown to smithereens by Russian artillery, missiles, and rockets. There are people lining up right now to do it and get the contract.
Oh, fucking A. You ain't lying. You ain't fucking lying. That's gonna bring our federal government and all those lobbyists and all those motherfuckers all kinds of money because we're gonna go back there and rebuild like we always fucking do.
And the Fed is sitting back laughing.
Yeah. I'm telling you, man, this thing, I'm in touch with people. I speak to some people in Ukraine every week, and they're telling me what's going on there. They're talking about the corruption in the Zelensky government, where all this money is going. It's going out of the country. It's not going to help any of the people living there. They don't know where it is. They're starting to draft women. They've got no reserve. It's, I mean, everything's falling apart over there.
Transfer of wealth. As long as they're transferring wealth.
And it amazes me the resistance that our own legislators have on reining that in. Like, you know, it was like a slap in the face to suggest actually accountability and tracking where this money is going. You know,
Rand Paul, you're evil. You actually want to have
accountability for all this Ukraine money. Oh, my God. You know, it's that,
they don't want accountability for that, where that money's going. Because it's had in their pockets, too. They've got investments over there. Let's not get it fucking confused. Our Republican legislators, our fucking supposedly liberty-minded individuals over there, they fucking have their pockets being padded by all this shit just the same way. They're still deep into this. Oh God, it's ridiculous. It's gross.
Particularly, by ending the Fed.
And the Fed and the income tax, except for foreign-derived income.
That's the conversation that gets you shot. Not talking about us. I'm talking about somebody in that political box.
I could get shot for a lot lesser things, I guess.
No.
I hope they fucking be the first time.
Coming to me. I'll put up a fucking flag for them. Say, come to this location right here, sugar tits. Come shoot me.
I'm not talking about regular folks. I'm talking about politicians there. And again.
Oh, I know.
All of those people got so much sand for any, you know, their pet issue or whatever, they'll speak on it. But when it comes to the DOD and that money and everything else, man, those people, they're going to back down. We saw AOC get up there and talk about how she was going to go against the Iron Dome in Israel, the funding of that, and saying we shouldn't be giving Israel $3 billion a year, yada, yada, yada. Man, it came down to it. She was on the floor crying and making the vote anyway, acting like, you know, putting on a performance of, I didn't want to do this, but yes.
Yeah, I'm going to do it, yes. Somebody knocked down her door at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Raise your hand if you all watched the GOP debate.
You're one of the few
that actually watched it. And I remember none of these Republican candidates even mention the fact that the Department of Defense has failed 5 years in a row in its audit to the tune of approximately $1.8 trillion that they can't account for, and none of them brought that up. You know, so here we are again. It's like, you know, who is going to do anything about that? You know, my suggestion is, hey, you know, federal government agency or department, if you fail your audit, however much money you can't account for, so you're going to have to pay the fucking price for it when you can't account for your money. And why is it that the Department of Defense is the only agency of the government that's allowed to fail that spectacularly, and you have a whole panel of Republicans, you know, trying to say limited government, we're conservatives, we're wasting too much money, and yet none of them bring up that one simple fact and what they want to do about it. That's the incompetence that we're looking at right now. And I'll shut up for the time being.
It's super fucking valid. And then on top of that, you've got all these other organizations like the fucking, you know, the tax bureaus and, you know, IRS and all the, I mean, they're all fucking, you know, getting ammo in, you know, by the billions of rounds. So it's like, You can't even really put all of the funding that is going to like defense and all that shit even directly all to them. Like what is defense exactly buying when we've got all these other organizations and entities fucking buying all this shit to fucking militarize the fucking U.S. Like what is actually happening? Because it seems to me like they don't need as much money if all these other organizations are fucking buying all that shit.
Remember what Obama said. He said he wanted to have a civilian force that's just as well armed as the military, right? Or something to that effect. Sarge could probably tell me exactly what he said, but yeah, he said that, and Lord knows what 87,000 more IRS agents, number one. Number two, how many guns and how many rounds of ammo have they built? Have they
It's called InfraGuard. It's called InfraGuard. You know, green police, all that other stuff. That's what he's talking about. Yeah. You know, it's called InfraGuard.
Yep. And that's the thing. These people, I mean, they over the last, what, 2-3 decades or whatever, since the 90s or whatever, they have not done a budget for the country when everybody else knows you're supposed to do a budget, right? They've been doing these goddamn continuing resolutions, all right? You know, oh, we want X, Y, and Z. We want to send $300 more million to Ukraine. The money the laundry that is Ukraine,
right? Insolvent, because they're all insolvent. Everybody's, you know, the FBI is insolvent. They're all done. They're all washed up. They know that.
Yeah. And
well, I don't know how we
your
can
local militia. That's the answer.
I don't know how we can expect them to do anything with a budget when we can't even get a panel of Republican candidates to agree on anything, let alone speak to any of the really important issues, because they're too busy bickering, worse than kids, to the point where my kids were sick of hearing it and said that they were worse than the younger kids bickering, and they're too busy throwing around insults. So how they're going to manage a budget when you have that many candidates that can't agree on one thing? Good luck.
That's one thing that the Republicans are amazing at. They're amazing at attacking each other and amazing at not attacking the actual enemy. Republicans as a whole, they just fucking, they love to circle their wagons around their own people and around their own fucking issues, basically, rather than actually going. They always pick the low-hanging fruit. They always, it is sickening. I mean, everybody wonders why the fuck they don't get anywhere.
Yeah,
they don't actually hold the other side accountable at all. They only hold their own people accountable. It happens in Oregon all the time.
Because
Oregon's
the media loves it. The media loves it when Republicans attack each other. I mean, even when I did my interview with the local guy here in North Carolina, all he wanted me to do was talk bad about my opponent. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to smash him.
Let's be clear. This is not just a media issue. This is not just a media. Absolutely fucking not just a media issue. I mean, I agree that the media feeds into it. I'll give you that. But let's not pretend that the media is like fueling this in some way and keeping this going. Absolutely not. Because like in the state of Oregon.
No, they want
I mean,
they wanted
we,
to
we,
attack
we
on each other. They like that entertainment.
It's gross. Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah, I'm not saying they don't capitalize on it. I'm just saying that let's not pretend that they produced it or anything like that. Because that's we eat our own in every stretch of the imagination. It's gross.
Do a click audit for yourself. How many of these clickbait articles do you click on? Because that's what drives it. The Facebook wine moms and the Republican cosplay guy. They're the ones who cheer for that stuff, and therefore they're going to keep feeding to them. The guy Vivek at the debate, Vivek.
I don't think you can belittle it down to just that, because you see this stuff on Telegram in straight up like full GOP with PCPs infighting with each other. I mean, I am really active in the party. But look at the engagement. So, I mean, they eat each other, like on a normal, on a regular, everyday basis. It's bad.
But look at the engagement on that stuff. Go to whatever social media, whatever you want to use as a metric, and look at the engagement on that stuff that's attacking. But the question I wanted to ask was, is there anything you guys think you could ask Vivek to promise to Republican voters that he wouldn't say? Is there anything you think that guy wouldn't say in order to get elected? Like, this is hilarious. I'm watching all these debates because I want to see what Vivek does next.
No, I think he...
I don't know about... He's definitely a fucking drifter.
There's no doubt about that.
he goes where the wind blows.
Yes.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Is no more than Barack Obama with an R behind his name. He's just an empty suit. He'll say what he thinks everybody wants to hear, right? Now, as far as what happens with, you know, people attacking each other, think about it this way. When Clinton was trying to impeach Clinton, what happened? The Democrats circled the wagon against Clinton. They circled the wagons. to protect him. When what happened when Trump was being what happened when Trump
the
was
Republicans
being,
circled the wagons? What do you mean?
They no, they didn't.
Stop
no,
the
they didn't.
Twice.
You had
they did it twice.
You had people like Cheney and the other guy. They
I mean, yeah, you have a few outliers there. Sure, you have a few outliers, but I agree. Man, people are still backing Trump like fucking hands down, even though he's a complete fucking trash heap. I think the Republicans are still backing him like fully. They're fully planning on funding him just like they would have before.
Not really.
They're
not
doing
really.
Everything they possibly can to protect him. Yeah.
But are they? Are they? Because think about it. Look at we have the Judas of Mar-a-Lago and what's his name? That's the Speaker of the House right now. We have the turtle in the Senate who doesn't like him. We have a lot of these, we have a lot of the punditry that doesn't like him. The so-called conservative network that is Fox News don't like Trump, you know. There are a few outliers on Fox News like Hannity and people like that. But on the whole, Fox News doesn't like Trump. So he's not well-liked in his own party, even though the people seem to like, even though the American people themselves seem to like him, right? He's not, well, in other words, when the whole impeachment scam was going on, the first and second impeachment and all that shit was going on.
I hate to say this to you, brother, but you sound real biased, man. Like, you sound real biased, dude. Like, come on, man. We can't be fans of politicians,
Did they circle the wagons for Trump when all that impeachment crap was, when he was talking about, oh, they're spying on me, in Trump Tower and all that?
They stopped it twice. They stopped two impeachments for him. Look, this is a dude who won't participate in their debates, but they still have to support him because he has a huge share of GOP supporters, period. So even if Mitch McConnell hates his guts, even if any of those other ones hate his guts, they still have to support him because he has the biggest share of the GOP as far as the voters are concerned. So, the game is the game. They have
to play. If they support him so much, then why are they allowing these fucking trials to take place, these fucking show trials to take place with Jack Smith?
Yeah, you can call things show trials if you want to. Criminal activity
is
criminal activity.
You can't stop a trial. You can bring trial against anybody. You can, personally. It's not just because they don't have the power to just, that's just not how that's, and really, you don't want that. You don't want them to be able to have that power. You want to have the separation of government.
Well,
it's there for a reason.
I haven't heard any Trump supporter say this. Maybe Sarge will be willing to say it. How about he was just sloppy? Why are you calling Georgia personally to try to pressure Ratzenberger? That should be something the underling does. No other person would have done that, made the call personally. It's recorded. We get to hear it. Then you get the situation with the documents where he's telling the guy, hey, move those, put them on the plane, and take them. Then the guy does it and lies to the FBI that he didn't do it, and then they got the video of him moving the boxes. I hear you. Look, man, I'm not doing the Trump fan thing, brother. I'm doing the real world.
He has every right in the world to take those documents.
I hear you. He has really expensive lawyers. He doesn't need you to defend him. He has really expensive lawyers, dog. And those expensive lawyers know that's a real case.
I appreciate the fact somebody's actually calling out Trump on his fucking bullshit and not giving him a fucking pass all the time. I'm so tired of this guy getting a fucking pass. Like a fucking golden ticket. It's gross.
Everything you just said, Naj, is a reason for you to consider him not suitable to be president of the United States. None of it is suitable to criminalize and try to put him in jail for.
Exactly.
What he did with,
exactly.
Now you can question his judgment and not having a minion do it for him. I get it. Fine. But what you cannot do is criminalize the right to protest or contest an election, especially when you provide abundant evidence of it, that the election was at the very least anomalous and in many cases corrupt and violations of Georgia law. You cannot criminalize when someone relies on the advice of counsel legitimate constitutional advice of counsel that has been verified 3 times prior in American history, and no one was ever indicted or went to jail for it. That's what you cannot do. If you want to not vote for Trump for president, fine. I understand that. What I will never accept is a criminalization of constitutional and legal activity, and that's what it is against Trump. This is lawfare.
Yeah, so when you hire a white shoe law firm, the kind that Trump has, we're talking about 1,000 hours, $2,000 per billable hour. That means every time that person thinks about your case and starts writing, that you're that they're being charged. These are really good lawyers. So I've talked to people on Blog Talk who tell me these aren't real cases. This is all fake. This is a scam, a show trial, and all of this. But the lawyers who are representing him are throwing up a paper war and fighting back in a case because the case is real. So we're going to see this play out one way or the other. But all of you people telling me that this is not real and a scam and all that, bruh, that's not the real world. That's not.
And the reason that the case is real is because it's not that it's illegal for him to look into the wrongdoings of the election. He can absolutely do that. He can call for the paperwork. He can ask for all that stuff. It's the way that you do it that makes it illegal, and that's the crux of this situation. Whether you like it or not, there are certain ways that you're supposed to do things within the confines of the law. Now, you can disagree with it. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with you disagreeing with the law and the way things are done, but that doesn't change the fact that stay within those confines. You are breaking the law, and you are actually technically vilifying yourself. So
one of the things that people need to remember is that while what's wrong about what's happening isn't the fact that there's criminal investigations. What's wrong is the motivation behind it. They're weaponizing the judicial system. That is what's wrong. Now, bringing these charges forth and against him, if he did something criminal, then they absolutely should be. You know, so you can have, there's two sides of it. One, yeah, he very well may have done things that were criminal. There very well may be grounds for it. At the same time, their motivation for doing all of this stuff and the way that they're going about it can also be wrong at the same time.
After the election, he would be fine. If he sat on his hands after the election, he would be fine. He makes errors.
Okay.
Like, this is not hard to understand. This dude makes errors. He gives them what they need, and then you can talk about the motivation of the other side. That's a fair point. You could say, hey, we see this guy as a problem. He keeps making mistakes. We're going to pounce on those mistakes.
You do notice they tried to fold this into a RICO conspiracy because there was nothing criminal whatsoever in calling a government official. The government official answers the phones, agrees to have a conversation with you about it. The conversation was extensively transcribed. I've read the transcript 7 times now. There is nothing in that conversation that is inherently illegal at all. Read it for yourself. What they did was Donald Trump did not believe what he was saying. He was perpetrating a fraud on the state of Georgia, the people of Georgia, and the Secretary of State, Brad Rosenberg. That's what they're saying. They are literally saying he was perpetrating the fraud because nothing he did in that phone call was illegal, not asking him to find votes after he outlined the reasons why he thought Rauschenberger would find votes. And by the way, many of those claims he made have been verified in audits by the state of Georgia, and I will give you chapter and verse on what those audits revealed. So nothing in all that is illegal. They are manufacturing conspiracy to fold it under the RICO Act.
Yeah, so again, I hear people on the show.
I'm just
going to
take a quick second
this.
Here to remind everybody that's listening out there. Sorry to interrupt. We have 3 minutes of the live show left. So if you're out there and you're listening, call in within the next about two and a half minutes now, getting close to it. As we go into overtime, 563-999-3698, very lively conversations. Cinnamon, I think you're still on the line. Have Donnie call in as well so that Donnie can continue on and join us in the conversation should he want to as we go into overtime. And, yeah, flies by. So, anyway, sorry to interject. And then I'm also going to bring Nathan in. He's been sitting by raising his hand for a little bit. So I'm going to go ahead and bring Nathan into the fold. Great conversation tonight so far, you guys. So, and we have the bonus hour coming up ahead of us to continue, and we can talk about, like, the impeachment hearings that have been going on with Biden. Lots of stuff we can chat about here in the bonus hour as well. So I'm very much enjoying tonight for sure. And, Robert, I'm glad that you've called in again as well. Definitely a lively conversation. So thank you all for this discussion. It's I love the back and forth, and I like it when everybody's, you know, being civil and stuff as well.
Yeah,
so I appreciate you having us.
Law Talk should call Trump's lawyers, because obviously Trump lawyers don't know how to practice law. They don't understand any of this, and they just need y'all to come in and clear everything up for them. Point blank, period. We can do Barack Obama. We can do Clinton. We can do anybody. If any president of the United States called a state office talking about, I think you can find X amount of votes. Dude, that would be a problem. And the fact that you're acting like it's this innocent call, like, no, the power dynamic is so that call at the beginning of it is egregious. You can't have a president calling this small office representative in a locality, putting the full weight and power of the U.S. presidency on that person within the call. Honestly, Raffensperger has more integrity than a whole lot of people who would have folded under the weight of a president calling them. That's a real honest dude, a lot of integrity.
Well, it's also one of those things that we call out Democrats for doing. You know, if we had a Democrat president doing that, or if there's any question about a Democrat president doing that, we talk about corruption all the time. There's corruption on both sides. I mean, so to question Trump about it, well, if the shoe was on the other foot, we would be questioning somebody else about it too.
Yeah, I definitely think you would question them. It's just the fact that you're acting blind when you see Trump do it. That's why it's like, come on, man.
Yeah, I don't do the whole blind thing.
The Democrats still question the legitimacy of the 2016 election. They still question him. They don't recognize him as being president.
Did that make any difference in him being president? And did Hillary Clinton make a concession call that night?
Yes, it does.
I bet you won't answer those.
Questioning the legitimacy of this president and the legitimacy of the election. That's the thing. They question. It's okay for them to do it, but it's not okay for a so-called Republican to do it.
So did he make a concession call? Did he make a concession call? And did he
moral equivalency is wonderful until you get down to specifics. See, we can say, yeah, well, they don't do it. Well, we shouldn't do it. If they do it, we say it was wrong. Fine, great. I accept that as a principle. But when you get down to the specifics of what Donald Trump was complaining about, and let me remind you again, the subsequent audits by the state of Georgia, which verified at least in part much of what he was complaining about, then that just doesn't hold water. There were things that, first of all, you got to look at the violation of the United States Constitution when the Secretary of State of Georgia and the governor of Georgia agreed to a consent decree that changed election law in Georgia without the approval of the Georgia legislature. That is a direct violation of Article 2 of the United States Constitution. That alone should have thrown the entire electoral count in Georgia into question when that vote went to the United States Congress for certification. That alone should have been enough to perhaps disqualify the vote of Georgia, the vote of Wisconsin, and the vote of Pennsylvania, because all three of those states violated either their state constitutions or the United States Constitution or both. So you see, it is not just a matter of moral equivalency. There are specific matters that need to be adjudicated and which never were. There were audits done that used the same techniques that the original car was voted. There was no signature verification. There was no chain of custody maintained. There was no, none of the procedures that are in place in Georgia law to ensure a fair election were followed. And that is what Donald Trump was complaining about. Be specific.
Exactly. So I got you. So real quick, man, and I'm going to say this to Robert because I don't think Robert's on that Trump narcotic. I think people on Trump narcotic can't be convinced of anything. But ultimately, think about this. A man so selfish that he would make his rallying cry, I didn't lose, they stole it, they cheated me, your vote doesn't count. What does that do to rank and file young GOP conservatives who decide elections don't matter because they'll steal them and I'm not going to vote in the next election? You think about that as far as the buy-in to a party or a movement and what it's supposed to mean. And think about how many people that he is disenfranchised who are not going to vote because they're convinced that votes don't count.
Good.
And they'll steal
them. He has 110%. Killed his own vote, his own party's vote.
Government.
Well, you see, and that's, there you go. But how are you going to fix something if you don't even try to fucking stay within the confines of it and actually try to fucking fix it from within? If you just throw up your hands and stop fucking voting, which is essentially what this asshole has fucking tried to get people to stop doing. I mean, really, let's just be realistic. He literally
Trump,
told people.
Listen to Trump's inaugural address. Remember what he said? What did he say? What did Trump say in his inaugural address? What did he say? It's a transfer of power to the people. That's what he said. It's not a transfer of power that the regular presidents always said in their inaugural address. He said something different. Go back and listen to it. It's a transfer of power to you, the people. Never been said by a president.
There's a problem with that, though. When he said,
I'm loving it. Do you believe McDonald's when they tell you you're loving it? Like, what? What's wrong with you?
So
well,
he said a transfer of power to the people, but then he eliminated the confidence that the people have in being a part of that system and having the power. So he may have said one thing, but then he completely undermined people's confidence.
He's not a king. He's not a king. He can't. He can't
no,
do everything.
Still,
I mean, where are the people at?
As,
you know, when I asked Trump, I said, "Where
is though?" He's president. That's the thing. He's president, so he has to weigh the impact of his words, especially when he has so many people paying attention to him. No, he's not king, but he still his words have weight. And he has to take responsibility for the impact that those words are going to have on people. Doesn't mean that he's responsible entirely for what they do, but the impact his words have, especially on such a large scale, has to be taken into consideration. Because with that power comes a lot of responsibility.
And what are we looking for?
That's not a reason to put him in jail.
I know.
Not to vote for him.
No, the illegal acts are. But again,
no. There are elements of the offense of the law that just don't seem to fit. I've read them. Other lawyers have read them. I know you say that whenever the government lawyers say something to be sure, I guess we're supposed to say it must be true. But that's not the way our judicial system works. That's why you have an adversarial proceeding. We shall see. There are many
lawyers
who are on the opposite side of the issue, and they don't agree with you, just as there are many people on the opposite side of my opinion that don't agree with me. Let's have it out in court, and let's see what happens.
And let's talk big picture. Can a former president of the United States go to jail? I don't think so. I don't think you – what, are you going to bring the Secret Service in there with him? I don't think, however this ends, as badly as it goes, no matter what, I don't think a president can actually go to jail. I think they can
put him
in
house arrest, I suppose. They can put him in
like
house arrest.
Yeah, they can turn Mar-a-Lago into his own person.
Yeah, big Latino colony. Yeah, right.
Right.
I mean, there's ways to do it. I mean, you know.
You know, how many wars did Trump start? None. You know, I mean, if he was a dictator with all his power.
The people of Yemen would tell you different. The people of Yemen would tell you different. The people who got hit with the mother of all bombs would tell you different.
Why?
People in Afghanistan who pulled
Syria,
out would tell you different. Like, brother,
Syria might think otherwise.
Syria.
You can't talk about a U.S. You can't talk about a U.S. president and say
he eliminated. He eliminated ISIS.
That's part of the job.
He eliminated ISIS. Thank God for that. Thank God.
That's part of the job. I'm not even judging him for that. That's part of the job. Like, I'm not even judging him for that. Remember when the Europeans thought they would slow Obama down by giving him that Nobel Peace Prize? Well, he said thank you and started droning like you couldn't believe. Why? Because, man, you ain't about to dictate to American empire policy with no damn peace prize. That ain't going to work. The Europeans tried it, though.
I will give him credit for the way he handled other countries to a degree, because he didn't allow the U.S. to be walked on. Now, that doesn't mean that he made all the best decisions, but
whoever has allowed the U.S. to be walked on? Post-World War II,
Biden.
He's been doing the walking.
Biden. Obama.
Y'all got to be out of here. Do you want to read Obama's drone?
Pick Jimmy Carter.
You got to read that, dude.
Y'all believe that as y'all want to. And start bowing to him like they're his king. He's their king. And he's the president of them United States. That's not right. You know, that's what Obama did.
You mean when gas was $2.50 a gallon because we had a good relationship with the Saudis, and now that this green energy talk has come up, the Saudis are pissed off and are price gouging us? Yeah, that's reality.
What?
It was almost $5 an hour, almost $5
yeah.
when Obama was in.
Yeah, I know.
You
I don't know what you're talking about. I remember going up to $7 when they're price gouging here in North Carolina.
Yeah, it's not true. Go to the beginning.
It just seems to me like you ought to beware of a guy who says that his energy policies will necessarily cause energy prices to skyrocket. You might want to look a bit askance at a guy like that if you don't want to pay high prices for energy. When he comes out and tells you that my policies will cause energy prices, and I'll play the audio for you if you want to hear it, then you maybe ought to be a little bit suspicious about that guy if you don't want to pay high energy prices.
So Obama did what all these people tell people is good policy for America. We started drilling on our own. We actually hit some of our reserves. We actually hit some of our so-called natural areas that we didn't want to hit. Obama started us drilling there. And guess what happened? The Saudis got mad. And that was when you seen the price spike. Then you seen the relationship change when he went over there and bowed, as somebody just said. Yes, that happened when he went over there and met with them. And what did Biden do at the beginning of his regime? Went over there and met with them too, to try to salvage the relationship after that Green New Deal talk, where we were talking about, you know, wind and solar, and the Saudis were like, man, you better get out of here with that, because, you know, they're a bad economy. That's all they have.
What did Biden do? He goes off. He did two things by leaving Afghanistan. He left all that fucking equipment there, and two.
That was Trump
gave
policy.
No, Biden actually took him out, left all the equipment there, and then he also, the stuff that we need to make the batteries, one of the biggest mines is in Afghanistan, and who did he give that mine to? He gave it to China.
Yeah, man, the deals that they make are outside of what we could do, man. And as far as that's concerned, as far as batteries and everything else, the more you talk about green energy, the more the Saudis get pissed. Saudis are ahead of OPEC. They're not currently there. I think Nigeria is. But Saudis have the most easily accessible oil, so they can make the most money on oil, and therefore they determine the price. So our relationship with them is how you can kind of look at gas.
We shouldn't have any relationship with them. We can produce our own oil.
Right.
Were you the one that taught Saudi Arabia and other people in the Middle East how to drill for oil?
Okay, the best way I can explain this is with cocaine. The best way I can explain this is with cocaine. If you're in your neighborhood and you're selling cocaine, and then Pablo Escobar moves across the street, guess what? He has more cocaine than you, and he can sell his cocaine cheaper until you can't sell yours anymore.
Then we need to stop protecting Pablo Escobar then.
So we got more oil. We got more oil than the Middle East. And it's the Basin Bracken up in South Dakota, Wyoming, part of Canada, in that one hole, there's more oil than all the Middle East combined. So it's not they got something we don't have.
Bro,
just George W. cut it off right before he left office.
That's not reality. And if you want to look up the relationship with the Saudis and us, go look at James Baker, former, you know, former aide to, what, the W. Bush era.
Yeah, they've been unifying the world
group.
They've been unifying the world
in America
for a long time.
That has more oil. But there's no area in America that has more oil or easily accessible oil than Saudi Arabia. We got tar sands oil and we got a lot of fracking for natural gas and things like that. It costs money to get to it. Saudi Arabia, you can damn near stick a straw in the ground and get the oil. But who built the infrastructure? That Carlyle group I just talked about. Who makes money off Saudi Arabia doing what they're doing? A lot of those corporations who are here.
You cannot argue that at the end of Trump's time in his first term, and he will win the second term, at the time at which he ended his first term, we were a net oil exporter. All right? We were exporting all to the rest
of the world. I just told
you
that because Obama opened up the reserves and everything else. Yeah, but that's – but again, I tried to explain this with the Pablo Escobar. I don't know how better I can explain this, brother.
He did not do that. Obama did not do that.
Okay.
Hey, one of the problems we got is they keep us fussing with each other, but the two parties is one party, and you can't name me very many of the big issues that keeps us divided. Like this is one, abortion. That there's the Democrats, them bad Democrats. But you know what? That's an abortion policy was a Republican policy. You know, but they don't. They down here at the bottom, unless you get your news from the vote record, you'll never notice that.
Who? Wait. It was a Republican policy. Was
George Daddy Bush in 1969 wrote a bill called the Title X, okay, that funds Planned Parenthood. This is in 69 and 70. The vote was 100-0 in the Senate. Nixon, a Republican, signed it. 7 of the 9 judges who ruled for it were Republican-appointed judges. And guess what? Them Democrats, all they want to do is just promote that abortion. And they do celebrate it, but we up there, the Republicans and Democrats, they're fussing back and forth. And like, for instance, in 2016, when the baby body parts for sale with Planned Parenthood broke, guess what? The Republicans are saying, you know, we need to defund Planned Parenthood. First, you have to fund it because it's a law, Title X, and you have to fund it. So guess what? They're sitting up there having hearings, and it's an election year, and guess what? Whenever it came down to the vote, there was a couple Republicans that were yelling, I can't vote for this. We need to defund Planned Parenthood. I can't vote. So they were a president not voting that gave them the numbers to push it through. But meanwhile, Ted Cruz is down there winning our heart. And, you know, he's making us feel good. But we're not seeing how we're being manipulated. EPA, same thing. Global warming is a Republican president's policy. So I can go through so many things. I'll tell you my story. I was one of the Republicans that would jump in your face and set you straight from 1978 to 2004. I got my first computer. My sister and my neighbor showed me how to do it. I was going and looking at the vote record, and I started seeing this stuff. I remember in the 1994 Contract with America, the very first promise was we will pass a law that Congress has to live by the same laws the rest of the people does. I don't know where they ever got the idea they didn't live by the law, but okay, guess what? Go look and see how they voted on that. It was they got more numbers, and I know people are paying attention because they got more numbers than the Democrats for the first time since 1938. They won a majority in 94. 96, the Republicans lost numbers. 98, and in the 2000, we had a razor-thin presidential election. So there was people out there paying attention to this stuff, but every issue the Democrats celebrate, okay, the Republicans oppose it, but it comes from them. I can go through. I can send you all kinds of stuff, and it's not something I got from a website or a news agency. It's from the congressional record, from the congressional, Senate, or executive record. Here's another big one for you. Ronald Reagan, he won our hearts. And he just had a love affair with the Bible thumpers, right? And guess what? You can't name one bill he signed into law that either stops or slows abortions. When when he took office, abortions went up over a million, went over a million and a half a year. And whenever he left office, it started dropping, and it's consistently dropped all the time. He never wrote anything. And his George Daddy Bush, his vice president. This is the guy that gave us. Why would a pro-life president pick a pro-abortion vice president? Wouldn't they be fussing about this thing? No, they're playing us. And there's so much out there. I can send it to you, man, and I'm willing to bet my life on it. You know, because it's the congressional record.
And here's something else to think about. The first one of the first progressives was not a Democrat. It was Teddy Roosevelt, who was what? A Republican.
Well, they're one party. They're one party. I just sent something to Sam. I just sent something to Lori where I got a thing from I just got a brain cramp. But this guy, Kennedy, sends us a thing talking. If you can look at it, Lori, I just sent it to you. He's talking about, now, my tax dollars already went towards securing the border, and then he sends me a thing saying about the Democrats want open borders, and if I can send him, and he gives me options for different amounts of money to send him so he can secure the border. Oh, so now I got to donate money to the Republicans so they can secure the border, because the Democrats don't want it. And we got to remember, North American Union came from the Republican Party, and when Newt Gingrich during Trump's years was out there, stepping up for Trump and talking about what the Democrats want to do, all the policies that Trump got elected to repeal was Republican policies. But the Democrats just get credit for it because that's what, you know, their constituents, that's what they celebrate, you know. But then we got one party that keeps me and you divided. As long as they can keep us fussing, we're not going to pay attention that they're – how many times do we see the same subject fight back and forth and then we lose it? We learn to live with it.
And look, here's the deal. The whole thing with the abortion thing and getting rid of abortion and all that stuff, that didn't happen until – well, not getting rid of it, but sending it back to the states where it should be.
Let me clear up some there. It never got sent back to the states. It never was something that was a state on any state, because if you got caught doing that – and it was happening, but if you got caught doing that, you were going to jail. The lady that they used to bring the case to Roe v. Wade, she came looking to her doctor looking for a connection in Mexico. And the next meeting they had this lady, a lawyer, saying, look, we want to take this to the Supreme Court. It never went back to the states. It never was in the states.
Well,
has anybody got any questions? You got any solutions?
Well, actually, it is back in the states, because look at all the laws that are being passed by some of these states.
It's in the states. No, it's not back in the states. It's in the states. It never was in
the
states, and then somebody said at a state level.
It should have always been with the states. It should never have been a law. Right. It should never have been something that was taken to the Supreme Court to make. It should never have been a national law. It should have been all in the states.
It was against the law.
Right.
There was, you know, you heard these things. Well, you know, somebody used the clothes hanger to get, you know, to take care of the job. You know, it was that kind of stuff. Or somebody did something, whatever. But the thing is it wasn't like the speed limit's 50 at a state level, and they made it 70, and now we're bringing it back to the state level. It's not like that. It was never a law or any
thing in our medical system that said, if you need an abortion, come to me, I do it, or go to this hospital or this clinic. You know, whenever it went to the Supreme Court, that is whenever the issue grew. But there was people getting it done, and there was people. The big thing was people could go to Mexico and get it done, because it wasn't something we did in the States.
Yeah, but this is why it's important to talk to people who you don't agree with or who don't have the same background as you. So we get Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court weighs in, and in an election season where everybody was predicting a red wave, all of a sudden they started losing in these states where Roe v. Wade became an issue. And at that point, you got to say to yourself, wait a minute, do we really have our finger on the pulse of what these young folks actually think and how they want to live? Because, I mean, it sounds good. Like, if you're a person who's against abortion, to say, hey, we got the Supreme Court to weigh in our favor.
That goes,
but politically, it didn't go your way. So maybe the rest of the country doesn't agree with you.
Actually, you're wrong.
Good luck.
You might be a little bit wrong about that, because that goes to programming. Over the last 50 or so, well, it was 50 years.
Well, brother, you can't call
programming
when you don't.
I'm making no deals with the devil. What's right is right. What's wrong is wrong.
Come on, man.
Right.
Come on, man.
No, it cannot be.
I'm not
going to
give up on me. Come on, man. I ain't going to give in. If something's wrong, then it's wrong. If the majority of the country is in the wrong, then they're in the wrong.
Yeah.
Look, the foundations of this country, what, how many percent really fought and stood up for the Constitution and the Bill of Rights? I mean, it was a small percentage.
Right.
All right. Let's do this. Go ahead, bro.
Here's the thing. When I talk about the programming, the reason why they did this thing with Roe v. Wade with abortion is basically they wanted abortion to be like a birth control, you know, like I got pregnant, I'll go the next day, you know, and get it, or I'll go within the next few weeks and get an abortion, whatever, you know. That's why they wanted. They didn't want the responsibility that comes with spreading your legs to do this stuff, right?
Good luck with that argument. Old folks telling young folks whether they should have sex or not, man. Brother, that's not gonna work.
What have they been using it? What have they been using it for? They've been using it for birth control,
Hold on. Before you do all that, let's do this in a real way. So Planned Parenthood or any other organization, whatever you want to do, in a city area, let's say you got a girl named LaShawn, and in a rural area, you got a girl named Sarah. These are young women born to poor families. Who's their primary doctor? They don't have one. Where's the first access they get to care about OBGYN and STDs and everything else? It's usually that establishment, Planned Parenthood, or whatever it is. It's not that all they do is abortions. The other part of it is the other services that they provide to people.
No, that's a lie. That's a lie.
Okay.
That's a lie. That's a common argument by someone who supports abortion and who's a liberal-minded person. No. That's a lie.
Cool.
A majority of the services they provide are abortions.
See, I'm not going to argue with things that people can easily
look at. You don't have to. I got a document. They sent it to me for a question. I mean, all this information when I was running for office, so I know.
It didn't start out as – it started out, you want to say, for birth control. I agree with that. But what they originally wanted to use it for was to get rid of certain people we don't want. Control the black community.
I just put in the chat room the precursor of Planned Parenthood eugenics was called the Negro Project.
Yes, and
you know,
listen, here's another one that's a part of this.
Right, and the answer is no.
Go ahead.
But, you know.
Here's another one.
They're not there taking people's blood and giving them cold medicine.
go ahead.
These people,
another one.
Evil institution. They're killing babies. Every Planned Parenthood, that's just evil, 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 man. It's murder, abortion is murder, black, white, doesn't matter. It's murder.
Okay. So,
here's another one. Here's another part of that, too.
Hold on, bro, because let me ask Joe this, because he said that with his chest. So poor women in America, their first access to somebody about anything that requires feminine needs, where is that place?
I can't hear you, huh? Excuse me? It could be my phone. I don't know. I can barely hear you. What?
So poor women in the city or in this, in rural areas, their first access to feminine care from a professional would be from where?
I don't know. It depends on what city, what state. You know, I don't know. America's a big place. Where we want to give me an area here?
You just don't want to say it because it hurts your argument. But that's the truth, and that's why they're still around, man.
Well, why they're still around or not is irrelevant. I'm just saying the issue of abortion, period, is where I stand, is that it's murder, you know?
If you don't want them to go to Planned Parenthood, you need to put forth a bill to where they can get care from a doctor.
Why do you think they say the worst place for African-American child is in the mother's womb?
Because conservatives said that and thought it sounded good, even though it's an illogical
statement. Oh, again, we do know what mathematics are. How many black children are killed every year in abortion? Unless you don't consider them children. The numbers don't lie. It is the worst place. It is the most dangerous place.
And as far as
you think that's a real argument, go ahead, man.
It is a real argument. If you believe in mathematics, yes, it is. If you don't, it isn't.
So the point I just addressed, why wouldn't you say, okay, let's put forth a bill to where poor women will be able to get care from a hospital and a doctor, and then that way you take away Planned Parenthood's reason for justifying themselves being there.
How about
because
we get defund them?
An abortion shop, they go away. Because a lot of
people at another time.
Lost an election cycle based on running that through the Supreme Court. So y'all can live in conservative fantasy land. Everybody else has to live in the real world, man.
You do realize, Naj, that now none of the states in the union, since the Constitution is completely silent about abortion, it doesn't endorse it, it doesn't forbid it. There is no constitutional right to an abortion. So you do realize that those states that are rabidly pro-abortion can now completely do away with the first, second, third trimester limit. They can have no limits at all if they don't want to. They are completely now free to regulate it in any manner that they see fit. And don't you think that's a good thing for you? So Alabama doesn't have to be like California, and California doesn't have to be like Utah. They can be exactly the way they want. They can have abortion paradise within their borders. Is that a good thing, Naj?
I think it is a good thing that it played out in a way that people can kind of vote with their feet and decide what they're going to do. I do think that's
the other thing. The other thing that happened with this abortion ruling is the left trying to intimidate the judges by showing up at their houses to get them to vote a different way, right?
You want to walk down the intimidation road? You sure you want to do that?
Yes, because it happened. It happened. The guy
I think more people should start doing it.
With a goddamn gun.
I agree.
More people should start doing that.
Clinics and killed people. You realize that, right? They bombed abortion clinics. Like, you realize that, right?
I understand that, but you're not.
Okay.
That's not the point. The point, the law says you are not to be able to try or intimidate these jurors, these judges. You cannot do that. It's against the law to do that. That's what they did.
Why weren't they prosecuted? Why weren't they prosecuted? Why? George Soros.
Why weren't they prosecuted? That's the point. Why weren't they prosecuted? They should have been prosecuted.
I know I'm probably going to sound like the extremist in the room, but I think more of that shit needs to happen.
If you're not Absolutely. Fucking ruling constitutionally, if you're not ruling within the Constitution, if you're not upholding the fucking constitutional values and liberty, the liberty mindset, the liberty-driven values of American citizens, we should not just intimidate you, we should fucking hang you.
Yeah.
We should be at your house fucking hanging you.
There's no right to abortion in the Constitution, but there is a right to life there.
Well, all I would say is I hope you keep pressing that message and see what young people think about it. Good luck.
Well, yeah. And
I don't know that.
Yeah, it's all about reaching the young people's minds. You know, it's always you can reach the young people's minds, but who should be reaching them young people's minds? Their parents, not the culture. And that's where we're at and where we're going to be, we don't know yet, but it's always going to be somebody that's activist about this kid needs your women's services, as you said. Okay, well, back in before modern times, if you got pregnant, it was your mom and the people around you who took care of your feminine needs and helped nurture you along. And if you couldn't afford the baby, a good, and this is along the same lines, and it was originally planned for the black community, but get a chance, look up a lady named Carrie Buck. There's a movie on YouTube called Based on a True Story, and just type in Against Her Will, 1994. This is a true act that happened in American history. And the worst part about it was they separated her from her mom to get this done. And then the guy that did it went over to Germany to teach Hitler's doctors how to do it as he was moving towards his doing his thing. And, you know, so this is what happens whenever the culture is deciding what we need rather than the family. You know, there's a lot of kids in the 70s.
I don't think fear-mongering is convincing. I think what you're actually doing is turning young people off with fear-mongering. And I'm going to be honest with y'all, man. If you're an engineering student in Alabama and you're a woman and you're trying to figure out what you're going to do with your family, what you're going to do with your career long term, is that young lady likely to stay in Alabama or is she likely to move to a state that actually has those choices? So y'all even got to think about the brain drain that's going to happen with some of these policies where you're telling career corporate women who may not be interested in family, you're telling them they have no choice. Now they don't stay in your state. Guess what? They pay taxes, make money, and spend money in another state that they moved to after you educated them for the first 18 years of their life. That don't sound like a good transaction, but good luck.
I think what we're doing is we're spending too much time creating choices for people that they probably never would have considered unless those choices were there. So it's a lot of activism trying to get people to push through something different, you know. But you can never, ever justify abortion as an honorable thing because there really is a human being losing its life. You know what? If a woman goes into the doctor because she's not feeling right, that back in the old days they did this. Today they can go in the restroom and figure it out. Okay, but back in the other days they would go to the doctor and then they would, I'm not feeling good. And the doctor says, okay, you got the mummy flu. You're going to be a mother. You're pregnant. And guess what he can do? He can figure out 9 months from now what that baby's delivery date is going to be. He might be off 2 or 3 days because she didn't run in there the first day as soon as she didn't know, you know, she didn't know. But the thing is, he can pick a birth date for that baby because it's so this is science. It was a lie.
Very true.
And hey,
there is a clip that I wanted to try to get to tonight before I lose the ability once we end our bonus hour here in about 25 minutes, I'll lose the switchboard. And this is a pretty good clip that I wanted to try to get to tonight. So sorry to interject here, but this is from Thursday on the House floor. Representative Virginia Fox, Republican from North Carolina, discussed a proposed amendment on the House floor. The Clinton Foundation is involved in corruption that would make even Hunter Biden blush. So I'm going to go ahead and kick this one off. And it's only like 7 minutes long. So
Virginia Fox.
It's definitely worth giving a listen to. Yeah, I thought this was pretty good. And so I definitely wanted to try to get to it tonight. So sit tight, 7 minutes, and then we will be back. All right, mute yourselves on your end and stick around, and we'll be back in about 7 minutes.
Chairman, I have an amendment to the desk.
The clerk will designate the amendment.
Amendment number 61, printed in Part D of House Report number 118-216, offered by Ms. Fox of North Carolina.
Pursuant to House Resolution 723, the gentlewoman from North Carolina, Ms. Fox, and a member opposed, each will control 5 minutes. The chair recognizes the gentlewoman from North Carolina.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in support of my amendment. My amendment is simple. It would prevent taxpayer funds from paying for State Department employees to travel to or attend events hosted by the Clinton Global Initiative. The rationale is quite simple. The Clinton Global Initiative has engaged in blatant corruption and influence peddling that would make even Hunter Biden blush. In perhaps its most famous episode in 2014, Hillary Clinton approached the Moroccan government about hosting a Clinton Global Initiative conference in Morocco. The Moroccans fronted the money for the event by funneling it through a state-owned enterprise that was extracting and exploiting phosphates from a non-self-governing territory, Western Sahara. This sleight of hand amounted to condoning Morocco's sovereignty over this disputed land. You heard that right. It was cash for sovereignty deal formulated just as former Secretary of State Clinton began her run for president of the free world. This deal was so rotten that even the Huffington Post deemed Fox News' investigation into this matter a, quote, brutal, clean hit on Hillary Clinton's campaign, end quote. Indeed, the Clinton Global Initiative scandals are myriad and include an episode uncovered by the New York Times revealing undisclosed donations linked to the sale of U.S. uranium production to a Russian government agency. As expected, the Clinton Global Initiative was unable to withstand the scrutiny and shuttered shortly after the 2016 campaign. That is, until late last year, when the organization reconstituted itself. Its operations are no longer dark, and this is the first state and foreign operations appropriations bill considered since its resurrection. It has since morphed into a factory of radical, elitist, woke schemes. Just last week, the Clinton Global Initiative convened in New York to discuss how to reshape our economy to tackle the left's pet projects that will make life for ordinary Americans more expensive and worse. Given the State Department's enmeshment with the Clintons and the initiative, we need to send a clear message. No more coordination with the U.S. government, no more conferences with corrupt governments at the expense of the oppressed people of the globe, no more representation and participation by the State Department, an end to its commingling with official policy, and hopefully the beginning of the end of this corrupt organization's influence on U.S. policymaking. Americans simply can't afford more radical policies purveyed by an organization that allows the global elite to buy and influence American foreign policy. Join me in condemning the Clinton Global Initiative's misconduct. I urge my colleagues to support my amendment, and I reserve the balance of my time.
The gentlewoman from North Carolina reserves. For what purpose does the gentlewoman from California seek recognition?
I rise in opposition to this amendment.
The gentlewoman from California is recognized for 5 minutes.
Mr. Chairman, boy, is this the level we've gotten to tell the State Department what meetings they cannot attend? Will we start saying what meetings they have to attend? The Clinton Global Initiative is a platform for government, philanthropy, business, media, and academia to discuss identified problems and to brainstorm solutions. We should be encouraging such collaboration.
The problems facing the world are daunting, and solutions will not come from one place. Let's take good ideas from wherever we can and not micromanage who goes to what meetings. I urge my colleagues to oppose this amendment, and I reserve the balance of my time.
The gentleman from California reserves. The gentleman from North Carolina is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see that my colleague has not refuted any of the things that I've said about the Clinton Global Initiative. Why in the world, again, would we ask American taxpayers to pay for people from the State Department to attend these conferences when they're likely not to gain anything positive from them and support a corrupt organization? I reserve.
The gentleman from North Carolina reserves. The gentlewoman from California is recognized.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I understand what this amendment does, and I don't accept the fact that it's a corrupt organization, and I do know the importance of these meetings and conferences in terms of us coming together for solutions to lead us to global peace and security. I reserve the balance of my time.
The gentlewoman from California reserves. The gentlewoman from North Carolina is recognized.
Mr. Chairman, may I inquire as to how much time I have left?
1.5 minutes. 1.5 minutes.
1.5 minutes. Mr. Chairman, we have a terrific debt on our hands in this country. We don't need to be spending any money that is not absolutely necessary to spend. Curbing attendance at meetings such as the Clinton Global Initiative is a good way for us to chip away at that debt and to save the American taxpayers some money. I think this is an excellent amendment. I believe that my colleagues will see that it's an excellent amendment, and I will continue to advocate for its passage, and I reserve.
The gentleman from North Carolina reserves. The gentleman from California is recognized.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, finally, I'll just say what this does is another attempt to chip away at our diplomacy. I yield the balance of my time.
The gentleman from California yields. The gentleman from North Carolina is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to offer this amendment. I believe, again, that it is good for us to highlight this organization and the fact that we do not need people from the State Department attending its meetings. And with that, I yield the balance of my time.
The gentleman from North Carolina yields. The question is on the amendment offered by the gentleman from North Carolina.
So what do you think of them apples? I mean, I just like that that she's calling out the Clinton Foundation for the corrupt organization that it is. You know? And then you notice the lady from California trying to rebuttal didn't, you know, offer up anything to, like, dispute how corrupt it really is. It's just like, no, I'm going to defend it. It's a global initiative. I'm going to defend this global initiative that's brought about by the Clinton Foundation. Like, come on now, people, you know?
Yeah, they, for that type of stuff, they have no defense, and they don't want to have any defense. They just want to argue that the bill, they just want the argument. You know, they just want the argument. That's all. They have no defense for the Clinton Initiative and how corrupt it is. They have no defense.
Yeah, this takes away the ability of the Clinton family to still be kingmakers for the Dems going forward. Not only the stuff the lady listed, but you can look at their record in Haiti. There's a lot of stuff you can look at when it came to that. I mean, basically, it ended up being a slush fund for influence, and they were able to buy a lot of it. President was Aristide in Haiti. I want to say this was like 94. He wins an election. Clinton and the boys wasn't happy. They fund the military in Haiti to do a coup and take over, and they promise and they get Aristide out of the country and tell him, when the popular uprising for him to come back, they tell him he can finish out his term, which was like a year and a half, and then got him out again. So, that, you know, that Clinton cesspool runs deep, man.
Right.
I think both sides work it like the Republicans to be a part of it, but they're not out front. Like this thing with Biden going over and blackmailing the prosecutor, you know, to get the prosecutor dropped. what's his name? Mike Pence was the guy that went over afterwards to carry out all this stuff to make sure it got done. And we don't hear Mike Pence being brought up in this stuff right now. So
Mike Pence is a damn traitor.
Yeah, you might want to look up the record of that prosecutor. It wasn't just us that wanted him gone. The EU wanted him gone too. So they were all pushing him out, man.
Yeah, but Mike, what I'm saying is Mike Pence, he had to be right there to hold. He was all about being there for Trump to keep Trump in step. That thing of you can keep your enemies close, but your friends close, but your enemies closer. That's what that was all about.
Well, that he was there to do that, but also think about this: who was when Trump was bringing all his cases to the Supreme Court, right? A lot of his cases Don't say they didn't get heard. They say no. Don't say he lost the cases. The cases were never heard on the bullshit of standing. All right. When everybody knows Trump had standing and all the rest of these people had standing as well. Standing argument in those cases was bullshit. But who was on the Supreme Court was, guess what? John Roberts. And John Roberts is a Bush.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I'm going to tell you what. We can all take sides on who we got to go, who we're going to be with, Trump, Biden, or the Democrats and Republicans. We can all take our sides on it, but at the same time, we've always heard at the end of, after an election, the people have spoken because of whoever won. But something right now that's happening has been happening for many, many years. The people are speaking and they're not being heard. Right now, the no party affiliates, the Republican Party's over. The no party affiliates are up around 60% across the country. In my county right here, Orange County, Orlando, Florida, the Republicans are outnumbered by the no party affiliates by a little over 36,000. And this is consistent all across the state and all across the country.
Yep,
now, here's what's
going to
happen in the next election. In the next election, we're going to be hearing election fraud when the Democrats win because these no-party affiliates weren't heard.
Yep, well, same thing in North Carolina.
I, for one, welcome more and more people being more independent and breaking away from this two-party duopoly that we have.
I think it's
becoming more and more evident to more and more people that this two-party system has been failing Americans, you know, for far too long, and I think I welcome the end of it totally.
Yeah, they're not independent. They're unaffiliated. They call it. It's unaffiliated he's talking about.
Well, yes, they're independents in some states, no-party affiliates in other ones. But the thing is, here's the thing. When you look at the Constitution, and we're not taught that. We're taught our experience. When you look at the Constitution, there's no two-party political system in it. There's no electoral college. There's electors that we, the citizens, vote, which is our fellow Joe could be an elector, and I can vote for him, and I ask him, why'd you vote for that guy? And he's going to say, because it's my conscience. It's not. I'm not answering to anybody. I was elector, and I voted my conscience. There is no two-party system in the Constitution, but what we know is our experience and not what the document says, you know?
The problem you run into when you have people that move away from the parties and they're either non-affiliated or whatever it's called in each state, is then they don't have a say in the people that are chosen in your major parties. And so you lose the voice of a lot of people because their options are limited.
Yeah,
and
no,
I'm not saying that.
Here's the thing.
That depends.
Yeah, but here's
that's
the thing. Here's the problem
close
I have.
Open primary.
Is,
that's a very, different, very
but,
important
but
thing.
But here's the thing. There is an open primaries is the law of the land in the Constitution. There is no such thing as closed and open primaries. It's open primaries is the law of the land. And like this thing, whether you like Trump or not, whenever the party can tell him, you can't get on the stage and be a part of participating unless you're willing to sign an oath that you'll support whoever the final runner-up is. Okay, there is no – the system says, listen, I want you to look at the preamble as the thesis statement to something you're writing, and you'll see this consistent throughout the U.S. Constitution, Bill of Rights and Amendments. Whatever's written in the preamble is like a thesis statement. Everything else builds on that, and you don't see anything about a party system. We the people, and all throughout we the people all the way through it. You know, the people get the votes for the vice president. They get the votes for the president, and they vote for the electors. And after they vote for those three people, or their congressman or whoever, once they vote, whenever the electors choose who the majority of the electors choose who the president is going to be. You know what? You have no say after that. Maybe it didn't work out the way you wanted, but I seen whenever this last election, everybody is mad at Pence because he didn't count and certify the election. And I've been asking people, show me in the Constitution, show me where he counts and certifies. It says Congress counts the presidential vote and certifies it, and the Senate does the same thing for the vice. It's completely separate. It's so broken up that we could get the guy that most of us didn't like. But there's no two-party system where they say, well, you know, we just don't know the Constitution, you know, and we know what our experience is, and we've been taught our experience, and we need to read the Constitution, or we need to just agree that we're not going to live by it. It's not something we're going to make an oath to, you know.
Robert, I'm going to let Robert speak because he was trying to speak earlier. So, Robert, you have the floor.
Oh, sorry.
No, I'm good.
Well, I'd like to say something now, Laurie. It's just let me claim Robert's time.
Okay.
Hello. Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to try to get the foot in the door for him there, but looks like the whatever he was thinking of and starting to talk about escaped his brain. But if it comes back in a couple of minutes, let us know. But yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Sarge.
Well, there's kind of a dilemma with this thing when we talk about the fact that there's a two-party system, which I'm sure we all decry, to include me. The problem is that, yes, the framers did speak of the danger of party affiliations or affiliations, but they wrote the Constitution in a way that makes it all but impossible to forbid them, even if... Well... That sounds like they got an emergency signal. Somebody got an emergency signal.
Sarge, yeah, you broke up there. You broke up a little bit.
Oh,
yeah.
The emergency alarm.
Yeah.
Violent.
Yeah, I don't know what that was. That sounded like an emergency. That sounded like an emergency alert. But anyway, like I was saying, the framers wrote the Constitution.
Did they run their test 2 days early? It's not supposed to happen until the 4th.
I don't know.
Go to your
that was an emergency. That was an emergency alert. Somebody had an emergency alert coming through on the phone. But anyway, the framers wrote the Constitution in a manner that even though it might be possible to diminish the influence of parties, it will be simply impossible to forbid them as long as the people retain the right of one free association where they can form themselves in any sorts of organizations that are legal that they wish, and number two, the right to petition the government for redress of grievances. Now, we can maybe minimize the influence, but there's no way we can constitutionally forbid parties. And people, being clannish in the manner that they are going to like to try to form associations with people of like political bent, and more likely than not, the results will be some sort of political party. Now, I agree with Nathan when he says that, you know, we need to have open primaries, and that certainly can be done by law. But I see no way to forbid political parties without violating the Constitution.
Well, it would work out because I agree. And we're going to all get together and we're going to say that, you know, those guys over there, do you know they're going to be thinking along this guy line? We need to vote like this and try to outnumber them. But that's okay as being activists as individuals. But when you got the politicians, the government deciding we're going to get everything organized and we're going to just make these two parties and that's your choice, this one or this one, then guess what? You just took our choice away from us, because it's supposed to be we the people, not we the government or we the political party. And if you go back and look at when Abraham Lincoln got elected. When you look at how he got a whole bunch of people, but when it came to the electors, and it wasn't an electoral college, the electors, he barely escaped through there, but he won it. But he barely got through because the electors are like, no, we ain't going to vote, and they voted for other candidates. And the other part was it wasn't geared down to there's only two choices. So you can't, these electors
people
can't
just want to be
and,
left alone. You know, just live free and be left alone.
And then we live with whatever we get.
On that note, I'm
going to
point out that we
only
got about, we only got a couple minutes left of the bonus hour, then the recording is going to end. And so before that happens, I wanted to give a shout out to both Robert, who is rather new to calling into the show, and also Naj. Naj, it's been a while since you've called into the show. So both of you, I wanted to thank you for calling in and having the discussions. I really hope that you will do so again. You've contributed to the conversation very well. And then I also wanted to thank everybody else that's been on the line, Mike, Gunslinger, Nathan, Sarge, of course, Joe Gibson, and Cinnamon, I know you're out there, but you've been sitting back quietly. And Valerie, welcome to the chaos that is Lucid Libertarian on Sunday night. and then Robert or Suzette, bringing it boy, they've been kicking back just listening. But before I lose the ability to unmute you, I'm unmuting you now. Keep yourself muted on your end if you like. But I wanted to unmute you in case you do want to chime in, because my switchboard is going to shut down like any second now. So all that said, please continue with the discussion, but I just wanted to thank everybody for the great conversation tonight so far, and we'll continue going here in no man's land that is after the bonus hour.
I don't know if it was Robert or whoever it was that said that he had no, that Pence had no ability to do this stuff. No, Pence had all the ability in the world because the Electoral Count Act of 1871 or 2 or whatever it was said he had the ability to say, okay, I'm throwing out this, I'm going to send it to the House of Representatives. He has all the ability in the world. I mean, if he didn't, then why did they come back and, quote, change the law after the fact?
Remember this. We don't live by the law. We live by the Constitution. The Constitution has to be the rule of the law. It wasn't, you know, it's like this. We're riding down the road. We pull up to a stop sign, and I rode through it, and you say, hey, man, that said stop. And I said, well, there's no cars coming. What are you going to say? But that is not what the sign said. The Constitution says in article in the 12th Amendment that the Congress shall count and certify the presidential election, and the vice president will be, the Senate will do the same thing for the vice president. It's two separate elections. And when we make a law way back, and this is our problem, we're living by our experience. We make up a rule, we're living by it. And then one day, it's like you did. You go back to 1929, somebody made a law then, but that law didn't, it's got to submit to the consistency of the document we swear an oath to. And just
well,
to say,
yeah,
and that's what people, they're going to the wrong source.
But again, the thing about this Electoral Count Act was that up until they changed the law, it had been the law for a couple hundred years, right? It was hard and fast that he had the ability to do that.
But not according to the Constitution.
Well,
We're living by our experience. We're living by the law doesn't have more authority than the Constitution. When you go to court, the judge looks at what the Constitution and the law says. If the law is not good, he sends it back to Congress so that Congress can either strike the law or change the amendment. But if there's got to be one authority here, and it's the Constitution.
Again, that's not the – well, it is the case. It should be the case, but I'm just going by what the law said, what that act said, what that law said at the time, and what happened after January 6th when they changed that law, when they, Doris can –
they should have had an amendment. They should have had an amendment revised. Because what you're saying is we made a law, so now this is the new standard, the new paradigm, and so we've lived 100 years or 200 years, and we go back to, well, you know, back in 1929, so-and-so got in a fuss and pushed somebody down, so it's okay for me if we get in a fuss to push you down. No. We're not living by our experience. I'll give you a good example of this. Some guy runs across the border, and we go, hey, man, you just broke the law. You're an illegal, we should call him a criminal, okay, but you're an illegal alien, right? And he goes, well, all I want is a better life. And so we say, okay, I'll tell you what we'll do, we'll give you amnesty and we'll change the law. And, okay, what about, what did the Constitution say about that? Well, we got this law back then that this guy came over and we gave him amnesty, and now the next president's giving more people more amnesty. When everybody screamed about Clinton doing it, and Reagan and Daddy Bush did millions more than they did. Okay, well, if they did it, we can do it.
You know, maybe this law when they passed it originally was unconstitutional, but they still passed it. And nobody ended up challenging it, right? This Electoral Count Act of 1871 or whatever it was, you know. But then nobody nobody ended up challenging it.
When they changed it. When they changed the speed limit from 65 to 55, and I'm cruising through there doing 65, I'm gonna tell the cop. But the speed limit was 65. Yeah, but. We posted a new one, yeah, but in my mind it's 65, but on the sign it's 55. So do we go back to the law that we lived years ago? We got to have a debate on this, you know?
Swarms.
Everybody to the fields. Let's just settle it.
My point was the law was on the books, had been on the books, and then when January 6th happened and we went up there for redress of grievances because we weren't getting it through the courts. We went up there for redress of grievances, you know, over the election. And the law said that he had the ability. I'm not arguing whether or not it's a constitutional law or not. I'm just arguing what the law said. The law said he could do that, and then they come back and change the law. Because they didn't like the fact that we were protesting the illegitimate election in front of the Senate, trying to make our voices heard. Right?
I know, but where we got our problems is I don't know if you know the word reprobation. Reprobation is whenever our experience is the standard of our experience, rather than the rule being the standard of our experience. Now, if the rule doesn't make sense, let's debate it and change it, okay? But to say because the rule, what we've been doing is what was written back then, but that wasn't written according to the process of a law being made. We made up a law that made sense to us, but it doesn't pass the Constitution test. So let's either throw the Constitution out or throw the law out, whichever one.
Well, you two guys, I think you two guys are arguing along parallel tracks, even though you're headed toward the same destination. Nathan, what you're saying is true constitutionally, because I'm looking at Article 12 right now, and it says that the President of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all the certificates, and the vote shall then be counted. So it says that that's what he does. He opens the certificate. He makes sure that the Senate and the Congress is assembled in his presence. And then he counts the certificates and reports the results. Now, that's what the Constitution says. Now, on the other hand, my other friend here is arguing that there was a law passed whose constitutionality has yet to be challenged in the courts. And he's saying that is the extant law, even if it conflicts with the Constitution, has so many of these things are rendered. But whether we think that is correct or not, that is simply the record of constitutional jurisprudence in the United States. The Congress can often pass an illicit law. They can pass an illicit statute, one that violates the Constitution, and it isn't turned around until there is a judicial ruling of some sort or a repeal of the law by another act of the legislature, and it remains in force until one or other of those things is done. So, it's not like either of you is really wrong. I'm saying as a matter of fact, I mean, de facto, not de jure, what we've got is an Electoral Count Act of 1877 that says the vice president has some discretion. So,
because more people know what they think the Constitution says or what the law says that the vice president can do. And then somebody else says, no, that's not the process, but it's a law. And then guess what? Now we're divided because we believe that, you know, the Republicans got gypped on this thing and the Democrats, they think that, yeah, this is the way it's supposed to be. But if we're going to live by the instructions, we're going to have to say, wait, let's look at this and let's decide which has the most authority, the Constitution or the law.
Oh, there's no argument about that, Nathan. But there's no argument about that. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land, no matter what Congress or anybody else does. So that's already clear. The problem is, how do we establish that? Because they got this stupid law. They're not stupid, but they got this law that says something that seems to be in conflict with that.
Yeah, but we can't. You see, the law is just an experience. The law says, you know, that's the experience we're supposed to walk out. And whenever you got people that believe and only know our process rather than what is the rules to our process, we're going to get in a fuss and stay divided, and everybody's going to say Trump should have won. No, the other guy should have won. Back and forth. And, you know, so the thing is we don't know where we're going. We're going there, and we're getting there by the standard of our experience is our experience, you know, just like the guy that runs across the border. We didn't revise amend the Constitution in order to make this, but we already got laws for processing people in. So we just keep making more laws, and never questioning, is this law constitutional?
I just like to add this because I think this is important. Even though what I'm about to say does not go to what either of you gentlemen are speaking to, but I just like to add this: there is a definite procedure that is allowed, explicitly mentioned in the Constitution. That is, at least one member from each House of Congress, Senate, and the House of Representatives, who object to an electoral count, and that has to be considered by a floor vote of Congress to resolve. That is clearly in the Constitution. That procedure was short-circuited by the so-called insurrection and the invocation of Nancy Pelosi coming in there and invoking emergency powers to set aside all administrative procedures and only considering the certification, foregoing everything else. That is also part of the constitutional process, and it was prevented by that insurrection, which is why I think the Democrats have something to do with planning it and or instigating it.
Yeah, well, I know one talk show host that keeps beating the drum that this should have went to the Supreme Court, and he hung up on me when I asked him, where in the Constitution does the Supreme Court have anything to do with the presidential election?
It isn't there. But it is there, you know, that Congress does. It is there that Congress says that is in the Constitution. And that procedure was short-circuited by the insurrection and Nancy Pelosi's invocation of emergency rules. That's why I think the Democrats planned the whole damn thing and instigated it.
Well, the thing is, if I can make a rule, the only thing that I can see,
I'm going to inject here a little bit. The only thing that I can see the courts and judicial system get involved in is, I think, the legality of negating election laws, negating the Constitution because of an emergency, a health emergency. COVID was used as an excuse for the states to circumvent their own laws because of an emergency. So this is where I think the judicial branch can actually voice it to go, you know what? No, this is not constitutional. Doesn't matter what the fucking emergency is. You can't just suspend your own laws as the result of it. You know, so that is where I can see a good placement for the Supreme Court to rule on that, and therefore stopgap, you know, because if we had one emergency with COVID, well, guess what? You know, what's going to be the next emergency that they use the same tactics for, circumvent their own laws for? You know, it opened the door for future abuse, and so that's where I think the Supreme Court can come in. Stop that gap and go no more. No, doesn't matter what the emergency is. Emergency power does not negate not only
do.
The federal constitution, but your own state constitutions and your own state laws.
Well, to see where we've lost it again, getting back to that, we make up a rule, and then that's what we know more than what the rule of the rules say. You know, a judge can decide, you know, anything in a case, and then, okay, that's the law. I got to do that or I'm in trouble. But it's not the judge. A judge's job is only to make a judgment looking at the Constitution and the